demonstration and assisting
meeting. Big B.I.
Love them because we love them.
Them a call us pirates. Them a call us illegal broadcasters. Just because we play what the people want.
He's fragile.
Analyze.
Very so fragile.
Them a call us pirates. Them a call us illegal broadcasters. PTI try stop us, but they can't.
Papa, 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 Papa. John with Drew and Leslie, get the shit on. Interracial John, shut the fuck up and listen.
My mustache.
You're a mess. Welcome to
the sound effects.
Yeah, welcome to the Interracial John podcast. I'm your host Leslie Mack, and I'm joined as always
by one very white guy.
And you're very white indeed. What's up?
My headphones are. What's going on here? It's like, bottom. Is it too loud? Why? What's happening here? I turn me down.
Turn the headphones down, weirdo.
Something's, I don't know if it's like sometimes the battery goes and it's like stops playing. You know, like
I don't know. But
all right. I'm good now. I'm ready.
Oh, now you're good? After we prepped to now you're ready to fucking do the show after we started the show?
That's me.
Welcome, as I said. If this is your first time joining us, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. Or you can go to our website, interracialjohn.com. Please subscribe. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Periscope at Interracial John. And we love feedback.
Yeah, totally.
Definitely. We love feedback. And you can leave us feedback a couple of different ways. You can leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. And if it's 5 stars, we'll read it here in the air. You can also email us, interracialjohn@gmail.com. And you can pick up your phone and dial 657-JOHN or 657-JAWNERS. And if it's under 3 minutes and not ridiculous, we will play it here on the show. Shout out to Rod and Karen from The Black Guy Who Tips for our general feedback rules.
Most definitely.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I got to say, we don't really ask for money. We don't have any, fire payment wall things. Like, there's no like premium this or that. So just like engage with us. Like, hey, I listen to the John. It's cool. That's all.
Yeah.
Don't get a lot.
It's a very low bar.
Yeah, very low.
Y'all can come up with it. And we do have some people that have been good enough to engage with us. I think.
Okay. And I did have a 5-star review. You want to do the feedback first or do the reviews?
Why don't we do. Well, before we do any of that, actually, we have some sponsor news.
Oh, did our fucking, I should say, our culture chest box?
Our culture chest box arrived.
Nice.
So we're going to do this on, I think, Facebook Live on our Interracial John page as well, so people can see the books. But I wanted to also open it and talk about the books on air, too.
Yeah,
so
I haven't seen any of this, so this is all brand new. Let's do it.
The box came. It's beautiful. Nice box. And it's labeled and all that. It has our nice sticker and logo on it. And I opened it up, and there is our books in there. Now, I wanted something for a younger child, because we're going to provide these for young Master S. And it says, Dancing in September with Tito Puente and Celia Cruz for Hispanic Heritage Month. So September's Culture Chest is celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month, and it's which usually runs from September 15th to October 15th in the United States, when we recognize the amazing contributions of Hispanic Americans and celebrate the group's heritage and culture.
I swear that thing arrived on the 15th. It was timed perfectly.
Yeah, that's kind of the point. And it had a little note, and it just said, thank you for going above and beyond to share Culture Chest with your community. You have been the perfect partner, and I hope you enjoy the box. I love your podcast and everything you represent. Wish you the best. That was from Rose, the founder. Thank you so much for that. And it's really great because it has a little Spanish lesson. It says, Mi amo means my name in Spanish. And it says, can you say mi amo? And then the little child will put their name, and it asks them to try to introduce themselves in Spanish to 3 people. It asks them to show off their musical skills by making homemade instruments, which is pretty cool. And then it gives them instructions on how to make a shoebox guitar. And it tells them the materials they'll need. There's a little card that goes in there. And then all the instructions on how to make them. And then we have the actual books themselves. I'm going to take a quick picture of this because I have to... undo
preserve
this
for for the masses.
Make sure that
is it Rose? Is that
it? Is Rose? Yes.
So Rose, you said thanks and you liked the podcast, but thank you. You're our first John sponsor,
yeah,
and
I think it's
we love that it's multicultural and appropriate. And you know, we've talked on the show before. We are referred to as child free by choice.
Yes,
a distinction from child free by, you know, not by choice.
Yes.
So we've decided not to have kids.
I would make a distinction of childless, which would be people that would like to have children, but don't have them currently.
Maybe child-free is sufficient. Yeah. Child-free versus childless.
I think child-free is a... So, oh my God, these books are beautiful.
But we have a lot of kids in our lives, so we're thrilled to share. And one kid, and one child in particular, we're committed to making sure he's
okay, we're not talking about us, though. We're talking about these books.
I know. These books are perfect for making sure we raise, you know, kids in our lives good.
That's true. So this, the one first book is called My Name is Celia. Me llamo Celia. It says The Life of Celia Cruz. And it's a picture book. It's won the America's Book Award. And it's written by Monica Brown and illustrated by Rafael Lopez. And it's a Luna Rising book. And it's really, like, fucking stunning. And it gives the book in both English and Spanish. So each page gives you both English and Spanish.
Nice.
And the illustrations are gorgeous. And there's lots of opportunity for the child to, like, clap along and give applause. It's really, really beautiful. The illustrations are in particular really good. And it won a Pura Belpre honor book as well. So this is really high quality. The second one is called Tito Puente, Mambo King, Rey del Mambo. And it's another one by Monica Brown and illustrated by Rafael Lopez. Also won the Puro Belpre Honor Book Prize. And this one's equally beautiful in illustration. And, of course, gives the life story of Tito Puente. So this is going to be – this is really, nice. Really awesome. So
And these aren't I mean, they are kids' books, but, like, there's – you know, like, but there's kids' books that are, like, pocket size, like 4 inches by –
these
are big 12-inch by – yeah.
They're gorgeous. And, again, just, like, be on the lookout for our Facebook Live. We'll do that. Probably not tonight because it's going to be too late, but tomorrow we'll do
And what's a subscription? Is $25 a month?
It's $25 a month.
I got to say, that is well worth $25.
Oh, absolutely.
So we're Box subscribers. We've been Birchbox and Beauty Box, Essence Box. We've done a few.
All sorts of boxes.
And some have, you know, some value some months and less others, and some are hitting. This was really good value. Those two books and the project and the card to, and then, like, to be able to have a, almost like a, think of it as a homeschooled lesson plan for raising a multicultural child.
A polyculturally aware child.
Yeah,
it's great.
There's not a lot of stuff
that
is available like that on a subscription basis.
Yeah, so cool. Go to culturetest, I think it's .com actually, and check that out. We'll have the links on the website as well. And again, be on the lookout for actual unboxing. You can see the physical books, but they're gorgeous and beautiful.
Can Johners get a discount putting in code John or something?
Yeah, they can put in John and they will get 15% off their first box. So
fantastic.
Definitely do that.
Awesome.
Yes.
Well, I really appreciate that, Rose. That's a great, and thank you for giving that to us to give to the children in our lives. He's going to be, I'm going to read it to him this week.
Yes, he'll love it.
Yeah. Well, I did say we had a...
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. Bum, bum, fast bum, bum, review. Bum, 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 bum.
Four ain't got shit.
Five stars.
I really got to get record that on, like, a normal decibel.
It's very funny.
So this is from Levi Winigan.
What's up, Levi?
Says, so dope. Leslie and Drew have been instrumental in my growth as an anti-racist white man while being entertaining as hell. This podcast is fun, balanced, the heavy and the light, and brings richness into the world. Well, thank you, Levi. I really appreciate it. But I'm going to say as a qualification, if you're out in the world referencing that the John has enriched you as an anti-racist white person, you can't be fuck ass. You better come correct.
Come
man.
Correct, dude.
You know, like, if you're like, oh, the John, I'm a very white guy, I'm a messy man. You're like, I'm a total fucking disaster. Like, whoa. Maybe there should be like a John certification.
I don't know.
Maybe.
A stamp, the very white guy.
It would start with subscribing to Culture Chest, to be honest.
There you go. Number one.
That might be the sole criteria to begin with.
So we did get some, we didn't get any voicemail, we did get some emails. Now the first one is actually part C, that the third email from our listener in Finland. And remember I said we couldn't read all three of them because they were kind of long, but this is the last one.
Okay. And so, that's Hannah, in case
it is, that is Hannah.
Hannah. Like, I need some like Hannah music.
There's maybe I don't know. You can get some Hannah music. I don't know what that'd be. No, that's not Hannah. He's such an idiot. Okay, anyway, so she says, you asked for feedback and I'm on vacation, so here we go. My third email in 14 hours. Also what you get when you live with a 5-year-old and only get to sit down 10 minutes at a time. Listening to your podcast and others I found through your podcast, Insanity Check and TBGWT, thinking on how privilege and racism functions in Finland and how it seems to function in other European countries around us. My Indian friend says that compared to Russia, Finland is a model of acceptance and tolerance. But hearing his stories from Russia, that standard is very low. He was talking about no one spitting on him in the streets here and clients feeling okay being in the same room with him at work. That's a pretty low bar.
It's really good here in Finland. I don't get spit
they
on.
Don't
I like
spit
it.
On me. I'm a natural born citizen and I looked the part, so I don't have personal experience, but I do know when people talk about what people talk about at work and on the bus. In the Finnish society, privilege and hierarchy seems to be based primarily on language and gender and secondarily on race and affluence. So it's better to be a black man who speaks fluent Finnish than a white woman who does not speak Finnish at all. Though there are exceptions to that rule. White people from Western Europe and America are good people and white people from Eastern Europe are bad people. Okay. Also, Kenya and Tunisian are good countries. Tunisia are good countries and Somalia is a horrible place. A runner of Kenyan birth ran for Finland in several Olympic games in the 90s. And also in the 90s, we got our share of refugees from Somalia. These refugees were the first large group of black/blackish people in Finland and became the target and face of everything that is wrong with quote unquote those people. But what really intrigues me is how the issue of language seems to be absent in the U.S. conversation about race and immigration. In Finland, ask anyone anything about immigration and foreigners, and the first comment is they need to learn Finnish. The person can be liberal or conservative, a Nazi or a tree-hugging hippie, but that's the thing that comes up first. Almost all, even extremely xenophobic people in groups can tolerate foreigners who speak the language and give up outward signs of their own culture.
Of assimilation is what they
mean. Yeah, and even the most liberal and open-minded people seem to think that it's impossible to survive here without language skills. I know people mainly from the university who have lived here for over a decade and don't speak Finnish at all. So all this fixation on language seems to be more than just common sense and practical advice. I'm not saying skin color is not important here. It is very much so, but curious how the main issue in any conversation about an in-group and an out-group, no matter where you are, is always the language. At work, whenever someone has a foreign-sounding name or they look different, the first thing they get asked is, do they speak fluent Finnish? The next thing they're asked is where they're from. For people with Finnish-sounding names and Finnish appearance, the first thing they get asked is where they're from. Among Finns, the tribal areas that date from around 200 to 1500 AD and are still one of the ways we evaluate each other. From what I've seen on TV and read in papers, this seems to be the norm in Europe. You are tolerated if you speak the, quote, original language as fluently as a, quote, true natural citizen. Though in some countries, it seems that the importance given to color is stronger than here. Though, of course, all of this is about what happens when you actually meet someone and have to work with them. When walking on the street, white people are, of course, presumed to be Finnish and everyone else is other. I hope I didn't bore you to tears. Hannah. I wasn't born to tears.
No, no. And I would say, based on what she's describing, it seems like, or it sounds like in Finland that the cultural affinity, right? Assimilating culturally, putting, they're a little bit more classist, maybe more than, racist perhaps, or it can be expressed in racialized ways, I'm sure. But so I'm thinking here in the United States, like, we have that, but maybe not to the same degree. Like, there's real, like, obnoxious folks like, speak English or get the fuck out. But a couple things I think, and this is my hypothesis, that lead to that not being the case. Our country has such a wide dialect difference, right? There's like regional accents that are pretty, you know, from like the West Coast to the East Coast to the South, they range pretty widely to start with. Two, we already have a ton of people that are like very successfully living. Like, there have been immigrant populations that have come to the United States and flourished and had their own enclave speaking their own language and had no problem. Like, in like 18-something, there was probably like, I kid you not, like, 400 different language newspapers in the United States.
Right? Right.
It was real common to speak. So this notion of you must speak English wasn't really here, but people did want to speak English. And then I think, you know, added to this tertiarily, English has become a little bit of a quote unquote modern global language, language of business. A lot of people learn English, you know, like they're straight up. There are people in Africa that speak English way fucking better than a lot of Americans. You know what I'm saying? Like, so people coming here, there isn't like, oh, you got to speak this language. Like many of them already do for a variety of reasons. And if they don't, it's not as nearly big of an issue. And if it is an issue, it's an issue to like the worst of the Trump supporters that are literally like, when we lived in Philadelphia, there was
I don't know. I don't agree with that at all.
I'm saying I don't see it as overtly as a cudgel, except from the really shitty people.
I don't agree with that point either. I mean, we saw in Flint that they didn't put the information about the water and what needed to be done with it into other languages.
I'm not saying, hold on. I'm not saying there isn't a barrier to services and all sorts of things if you don't
but
assimilate.
But I'm saying that's the same thing.
No, she's saying people say they don't mind as long as you. I was talking simply about people, like services and other things. Yeah, absolutely. There's going to be an issue with language. Absolutely. I'm just talking about generally, like the American citizen. I don't think Americans hate on people more or less whether they speak more or less English. I think they hate
but
on people.
To
because
me,
they hate
like
on people.
They're one and the same because somebody that doesn't. Somebody made a decision not to do those translations based solely on the fact that they think everybody should speak English. Like, that's their assumption. If you're here, you should speak English. I don't need to accommodate anybody, any other language.
I see that as supremacy. And I was, again, just speaking to, like, the individual attitudes of people.
Right.
And I don't think generally Americans take this, like, you got to speak fucking English or get out. Like, of course there are some, but I don't think that's the norm. And she said, if I'm interpreting Hannah correctly, that seems to be the norm for all classes, whether you're racist, xenophobic, conservative, liberal. It's like, oh no, they need to speak Finnish. They need to speak Finnish.
I don't know. I think that there's a real big to do about that. I think we see it with AAVE. I think we see it with non-English speakers. I think that more people than you are alluding to have that same attitude.
About speaking English?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it's a go-to for lots of folks. Like, if they get angry and somebody doesn't speak English, that's where they go, no matter who they are.
Yeah, well, you're correct in that. So it seems like maybe the difference is they're probably the same amount, but in Finland, it's this cudgel is used in a very specific way by everybody very happily.
Right.
Here, it's used as a first weapon of like, fuck you, this.
Right.
It's not quite as overt, you know, but you're right, absolutely. As soon as somebody has any issue with mm-hmm. you, it's going to be, what? I can't understand what you're saying. Speak English, motherfucker. Yeah. Get the fuck out.
Yeah.
It's my country. Mm-hmm. Okay, whatever.
Yeah, douchebag. and also, I think that that's a distinction that's made, like, generally about immigration. That is something people talk about all the time, is this need to speak the language, which is just ridiculous.
Well, I have an interest sometimes in just, like, idioms and language and stuff. And there are, languages that are dying, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, on the other end of the spectrum, again, supremacy and issues. If a language is allowed to die, it's in some ways that entire culture has lost something. Oral history, you know what I mean? It's just, mm-hmm. it's a language going extinct is to me, you know, like, it's depressing. It's really depressing. I understand there's very, very small regional dialects that, okay, there's not enough people to speak them. And, you know, but just the fact that we've eviscerated a people to the point that their language is extinct. That's to me, the concept of a language going extinct seems, I don't know.
I think it's kind of like, I mean, it just happens.
I don't know if it just happens, but the reasons and the why and for all the stuff we're talking about, because it just, people don't put importance on it. They don't think it's important. They don't want it. They don't put content in it. It seems a very finality on a marginalized group or people of culture.
That's true.
That their language has fucking died. That's kind of like, even just the phrasing, like a language has died and extinct, it's kind of weird.
Yeah. I think a lot of times people say, but a lot of times that's like an assumption too. And then, like, we hear this all the time. They'll find, like, you know, a tribe or you know, people that are living in indigenous lands. And they'll be like, oh, y'all still speak this? Like, the idea of death, I think, is really, like, from a, you know, a white, like, gaze perspective. Like, just because y'all aren't learning it doesn't mean nobody on the globe speaks the language. Like,
no, but there's languages that are becoming extinct because nobody on the globe speaks
absolutely
them. And then there's what you're talking about, languages of I would say, like, limited diffusion.
Right.
And they're and they're not seen as a concern or an issue. They're seen as a service problem here in the United States.
Correct.
How, you know, if someone that speaks, I don't know what's a limited language, like one of the not the main Thai language, like Karen, right? Right. Like that's probably pretty hard to get a
Karen interpreter.
Yeah, in the middle of, like, I don't know, like Buffalo. Yeah. It's probably tough, you know, in a court where you have to have one.
Right.
In a medical where you have to have
right,
one.
Right.
But so it's not even viewed as, like, this limited diffusion is a problem other than us white people giving services, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's viewed very differently.
Right. So we have two more emails. One is, the subject is Love Y'all.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
It says, Dear Drew and Leslie, I've intended to send this email for a few weeks now. Procrastination is my cross to bear. I've been an avid listener for months now since you guys guest starred on an episode of the Blackout Tip. Shout out to Rod and Karen. Shout out to Rod and Karen. My first time listening was the Prince tribute followed by Lemonade Review. I was sold immediately. The candid expression of the meaning and perspectives of black women was a revelation. You two consistently provide a stellar product. Your creative and in-depth coverage of current events is enlightening. I love all your segments. The little things stand out too. Drew's sound effect game is on point.
It's funny. I love that she started with, like, you know, Lemonade. It was great. And then you have all these black women. And then you two.
Yeah.
And then Drew's up there.
Yeah.
as Dr. Amin says, in the rice paddy.
In the rice paddy. Your back and forth, while informative, is laced with love. Over the last years, I've given up relationship with white people for self-care reasons. And it gives me hope to see interactions with a very white guy who doesn't center themselves and doesn't interject in intra-community discussions. Finally, Finland may be cool, but San Antonio is better. Drop by anytime. LOL.
Oh, thank you. And on behalf of all white guys everywhere, don't start. Don't give us any reposts. Just keep staying away. Right. don't use, like, where's my, I have a soundbite that's like, you made a decision because of something I said? Like, no.
Yeah, you need that. What's that cartoon of the, like, white guy pointing in the mirror where he's like, you get back out there.
You get back in
and
there.
You make this all
you
about yourself.
You derail this conversation, white guy. You do this.
You do it.
Make it about you.
So the second email is actually specifically for me from the same listener. So subject, thank you. This email is specifically for Leslie. I wanted to tell you how much I appreciate everything you do, the hard work you put in, the struggles you face on my behalf as a black man, the obstacles you knock down, clearing a path for the people to come after you. I see the opposition you face from the other side. I see the flack you take from people who want to make black liberation a thankless job. I need you to know that your appreciated words being what they are. I will be contributing to your vacation. You deserve it. Take care of yourself, sis, and thank you.
Oh, God, that was really sweet. Is it anonymous?
No, it's from somebody named Micah.
Oh, Micah, that was really sweet. Oh, we're getting. Oh.
With something I said, you're going to let that influence you? Oh, this is all my fault.
I was trying to get something to occupy the space.
Thank you.
Notice me, senpai. Notice me.
So, thank you, Micah. That was really nice, obviously. It moved me, so thanks. So I was home this past week. I was home while I was working.
Let's clarify. You went to Brooklyn. Your home is here in Michigan with me.
I went back home. Like, come on. Okay. Stop yourself. Okay. Like, okay. Where I grew up, home.
Okay.
And I was working in New York, and so I got to spend some time with my family, which is really cool. And I got to eat a bunch of good food and see my mom, who cooked dinner twice for us, and spend a ton of time with my nieces, who are all getting entirely too big and, you know, worldly and all of that good stuff. But it was really nice to see all of them. Of course, it was not without its issues. I wanted to tell one quick story that happened to me in Macy's. I did a little bit of shopping one of the days. I had a meeting with Scylla Abrams. Shout out to Scylla Abrams, whose new book, Black Lotus, just came out. You guys should check it out. She's freaking awesome. But I had a breakfast meeting with her, and then I went shopping. And went to Macy's, and I was going to get something very specific. I needed to get some tights to wear to the event that I was speaking at that evening. And so I went all the way up to the sixth floor, and there's an express elevator because there's a restaurant also up there. So there's like an elevator that literally goes from first floor to sixth floor, and that's it. So I'm standing there waiting for the elevator, and the express one goes, and I walk over to it and I get in, and this white woman runs over and she's like, "Hello, the elevator! Hello, the elevator!" Like that. So she's literally the only white person on the elevator. It's a bunch of black women and her. We get on the elevator and we stand there. Now, there's ample room for this bitch to like put her floor in or whatever she's trying to do. She starts barking at the woman that's standing closest to the thing. "Press 5! I said press 5! Press 5!" Like over and over again. And I look over at her and I go, "She doesn't work for you, you know. You can press whatever you want to press yourself." And the woman turns to look at her and she goes, "This thing don't go to 5. It was brilliant.
What did it go to 4? See, that's
it went to 6 because it was a fucking express elevator.
This thing doesn't go to 5. That is just...
This thing don't go to
5. Honestly, to me, like, that is the greatest, like, single, like, when you can have a response that's like, "I've heard all this nonsense. I listened here. I stayed totally fucking silent. You're a dumbass bitch. And I love you for coming in and setting her straight. This one doesn't go to 5.
This one don't go to 5. My favorite was her response then goes, "Well, how do I get to 5? And the other woman that was the other side goes, "I don't know. As she said, we don't work here."
Wow.
Like,
wow.
What in the world? Anyways, I also got to go to the Rue 107 showroom. Shout out to Rue 107. And I got to get a new outfit for our anniversary party in Jamaica. And it was so fun going to the showroom. You can order their stuff online. You go to Rue 107. You can search them. But they have an actual showroom in New York. It's not a store. It's like literally in the garment district and it's in a building. But you can go and try on stuff there. And it's where they like ship all their stuff out of and stuff. So it was really fun to get to try on all this different clothes. And it's really, I think I stepped really far out of my comfort zone. Like, have I ever worn anything like this before?
No. But here's the thing. So you said that it's design, whatever. It's like its target audience is black women, correct?
And black women of different shape. Women of color, you know, that are not the runway
size. Not traditionally shaped. Yeah, yeah. Okay. And for anyone who's been out in the real fucking world, you know, like there are a slice of size 0 to 2 women. They're there, you know, we see them here in town, but there's an awful lot more of women that like, and I don't just say, I'm not talking size, that are like, you know, maybe like a 16, 18 on the bottom, but like a 10, 12 on the top, right? That happens. That's a normal, you know, that happens. Maybe they're on the top, they're a certain size, on the bottom, they're different. That happens. Not a lot of places make clothes for that. I think because this place makes clothes for women, you know, that are like that, like I don't want to say differently shaped, but just not traditionally shaped, you bought a piece that you never would have bought before because it's actually flattering for you. Like, you did go out of your comfort zone. Like you're showing midriff and, like, your titties is like, "Man, your titties is out." Like, it's sexy as fuck. Like, you showed it to me. Like, you better have bought that. Like, for real. Like, you bought it, right? Like, don't be fucking just sending me these pictures if you didn't buy that. Cause,
well, one of them I didn't buy. I was like, I only bought one of it. They're a little pricey. And, you know, I'm not trying to, like, break the bank here. But it was nice to just have options that looked good on me and, like, were fashionable. And, like, I don't know. It was really fun. And the woman was really sweet and, it was just, like I said, it was just really fun, and I'm really happy with my choice and my purchase. And
it was a good decision.
If you go to their website, you can, I think you get 10% off your first purchase, which I got, so check it out. They're not paying me for this. I'm just saying I really love my dress. And shout out to Sherelle Brown, who is a model for them, and she's the one who turned me on to them and told me to go to the showroom, so shout out to her. She's actually on the ground in Charlotte right now, so sending up prayers for them.
And if you don't know, she's Awkward Duck.
She is Awkward Duck, sorry.
At Awkward Duck.
Yes. And shout out to Ralph. She's awesome. And finally back home from the UK now, and I'm doing that. Jumped right back into the good work she started before she left. So
right on.
Awesome for her. So my nieces.
What's this other piece you're skipping?
What stuff am I sipping?
This phone thing.
Okay, so, you know, we had, while I was in New York, these bombs went off while I was
there. Yeah,
these explosions. I don't know if they call them bombs technically or not, but these explosions happened. And, like, the other ones that didn't go off and stuff. So, the morning after the one that actually did detonate, about 8:15 in the morning, everybody in New York's phone got one of those emergency alert system alerts.
Oh, yeah.
And it said the name of the person they were looking for. And if you see them, that they're wanted in, you know, a suspect in the bombing. And if you see them, call 911 immediately. And they're armed and dangerous. So I'm just... First of all, it was unsettling to get it. And
yeah, if you don't know, the thing's like...
Right.
And it there's a deep in your settings on your iPhone a way to turn shit on and off, and it's almost impossible to turn this one off. Like the alert, like the Amber Alert, child alert, like that kind of shit. Like it'll, like your phone can be on, I think, do not disturb. It can be on like silent. It can be on all kinds of airplane right. mode, and that shit still comes through. It's
yeah, but
crazy.
My whole point is like I actually like the it went off when we had a tornado here, and it's useful. Like it's meant to convey those things. But here's what it was. I have it on my phone right now. I took a screenshot. It says emergency alert wanted: Ahmad Khan Ramini, 28-year-old male. See media for pic. Call 911 if seen. See media. Like what media?
Yeah, what's that mean?
What does that fucking mean? You can't put a link with it or anything, and you can't put an image.
Why can't you put a link? Oh, because it's the system.
It's a fucking alert system. It's not meant
to
give that information.
It's ancient ass like SMS yes. alerts.
It's meant to be like, if you don't have a smartphone, it'll still fucking work. So, anyways, I was just appalled because I can just imagine like immediately like all of the, you know, brown and near
any
brown
fucking
people,
Muslim person, any vaguely looking with a beard or
they
a
literally just like deputized
it.
An entire fucking
yeah,
city.
Good Christ.
And the thing is, they found him a few hours later. Two things about that. One, there were they didn't find this individual because of anything that came
alert
through
tips.
The alert.
Yeah.
They actually had to do police work, you know, forensic evidence, and they found him that way. So, you know, that's number one. Number two, did they send another alert? Hey, he's found. Stop fucking looking at every brown person you see suspiciously. No, they didn't do that shit either. And the third thing that was really disturbing to me is that because it happened during rush hour, like my nieces got it during their commute to school. And a lot of children have phones now. And this bypasses whatever, you know, protocols are
right,
there.
Right, right.
And it's kind of traumatizing to get that sort of thing. And also, I imagine people were telling me, like, on the train, you heard everybody's phones go off.
Yeah.
That's fucking unsettling as shit.
Like 30 fucking thousand
yeah.
phones at once. Jesus.
Terrible. So I just think it's just, like, poor, you know, decision making. It's not a good use of that system. Terrible.
We were in a movie. And it was like... You know, it wasn't a crowded movie. It might have been like 18 people in there.
Yeah.
But, you know, within a minute and a half, every goddamn phone, 18 phones, I'm like, geez, Louise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that system, but I guess it's, I don't know. You know, and that's the whole, like, the media, the I don't say the lie because they were looking for this person, but, like, the dog whistle, right, goes all over the place. And they don't do anything about it afterwards. Like, oh, okay, whatever, no big deal, you know.
Mm.
What was the one I tweeted this morning, CNN, and they're just always consistently, like, garbage, trash, fucking dumpster bullshit, fuck ass. But they had a story, and I was like, it was almost right. Like, it was less wrong than usual. So I took notice, like, oh, the lead, the LEDE, says protest, right, in reference to Charlotte. Like,
mm-hmm.
protest. And then I click in, and like, oh, it's Faith, and I can't remember her last name, but she's a black woman that writes for them. I'm like, well, it makes sense. She used the word protest. That's good, you know. Not even an hour later, on that same website, on the main page now, her story from protest now says unrest.
Mm.
And it's like, you know what? That's not fucking accidental. An editor decided, like, the word protest has some... there's denotation and connotation. And the connotation's got a little bit of, like, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? But, like, you know, protest is valid and there's some justification and it's righteous. You know, like, there's some connotation behind it.
Right.
That's why they get mad at you, at folks protesting other things. Like, well, that's not what you're supposed to. Don't protest the flag. Don't protest on 9/11. Like, you know, they get mad because protest is a righteous thing.
Right.
Unrest is just fucking, like, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's different. And I didn't even notice this. Rain of April, shout out to her, pointed out. The second lead, they put underneath the photo image of the scene of this unrest, police serving an arrest warrant. It's like, whoa, the dude that got killed wasn't being served a warrant at all.
Right.
They were serving someone completely different.
Right.
Like, it's, again, it's just like, fuck that fucking... I don't know. All that shit.
I don't have any... I was really trying not to talk about any of that. So if we could refrain moving through the rest of the show, it would be good for me. Thanks. I just don't feel like getting triggered and just getting upset. So we're going to try... We'll talk about lots of serious things, but just not that. A lot of people will be talking about it, and you can get all of that content from plenty of places, and I'm sure...
I wasn't intending to talk about Charlotte other than the CNN and media complicitly totally fucking ridiculous.
We have something about media a little bit later, so that's actually a good point to put there. But I wanted to mention three quick stories about our nieces because they cracked me up like so much this trip. One was our 14-year-old niece. She started high school this year, and I'm talking to her about her classes, what's going on, blah, blah, blah. And she says to me, oh, yeah, I'm taking this class called Feminist. And I'm like, okay, feminist.
Just singular, just feminist?
Just feminist.
Not feminism?
No, feminist.
Feminist.
And I go, okay, feminist. I go, great. I start talking to her a little more about it. She has it every fucking day, every day.
I'm taking feminist 5 days a week.
And I go, you know, what is it about? You know, blah, blah. She finishes telling me the teacher is a white woman. No surprise.
Yeah, you're not doing it justice. You were telling me this story before, and
I'm not done with this.
I know, but I'm saying even this part, we're in the car when you're like just normally talking. You're like, yeah, she told me like in this class, and it's like feminist. I go, whoa, wait a minute. Show me everything you've been given.
No, I didn't get to that part yet. That's not how the story goes. She goes, this white woman's teaching. Oh, how, you know, has she always taught this? She goes, no, it's a new class. She used to be an English language teacher, and she said she wanted to teach this class, and they let her. I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. Get me everything this bitch has given you thus far.
That's the part that tripped me out. You're like, wait, stop. Get me your syllabus.
Every single thing. I want everything she's book giving list, you, period. I want to see all of it. She gives it all to me. I start going through it. And I actually, I have a whole Twitter thread that I did about it just with some red flags, so to speak. I will be keeping very close tabs on this class. I have this teacher's email if I need it. I have a feeling I will. I'll mention a few other tidbits I was getting from her. There are no white children in this class, so it's a class only of girls of color.
Taught by a white woman.
Taught by this white woman. And the next day, I'm talking to some more. We were talking about something else, and she goes, you know, I meant to mention, man, that teacher, she gives the worst homework. It doesn't make any sense. I refuse to do one of them. And I go, whoa, whoa, whoa. You refuse to, this is the second week of school. I go, you refuse to do a homework assignment. What was the assignment? She says, well, she wanted us to write about a time that our gender stopped us from doing something. And I told her that that's never happened to me. I hope it doesn't. And I said, wow, that's great. I go, what did everybody else do? She goes, oh, most of my friends just made something up. That seemed to make her happy. Number one, that's terrible that she was like, you could, that her students could see like, oh, the lie worked. Let me just feed her whatever the fuck she wants. So then she's talking some more on her niece, and she finally leaves me, goes, you know, auntie, you know, these white women are crazy. I stopped trying to figure them out a long time ago, and I just do me. She's 14, you guys. She already is like, I stopped trying to figure these white women out a long time ago.
I got a soundbite for you.
Thanks a lot, guys. When I woke up this morning, I was hoping to learn about racism from a white lady.
It's feminism.
Thanks a lot.
Yes, exactly. No, I thought you were going to play the one that black women don't like you.
There's a couple of vines that get like, I just like regular play. Like I can see like something. Like, I love say,
that one.
Like, this vine got this many loops or that many loops. And that one and the black people can't be racist are the only ones that get like ongoing and consistent play just like out there.
Black people can't be racist. Anyway, so shout out to Jennifer Lewis. Cece, who is our niece that is in high school, she's finishing high school this year, her senior year, very exciting for her. She is working on a project that's analyzing the effect of city government on her life as her age, 17, 18 year old. And so there's a couple components to it. And we started talking about some things, and I was going to hook her up with a few people that work directly in that arena of movement work to talk with her about some stuff. But she goes, oh yeah, you know, I'll share you what I've written so far. You can take a look at it and we can talk about it. I go, great. Share it with me. She goes, it's Google Docs. I'll just share it with you. So she shares it with me. And I get the email, and the title of it is "The City Is Mine."
So I want to make a little side note. I don't know if you even noticed, but you posted it on Facebook. Like, God damn, look at these children. I love it. Like, and I just love her to death. Like, like 2 years ago, you know, again, maybe she was 12 at that time, 13, 15. I can't remember.
That would be 15. Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess it was the first Thanksgiving after Mike Brown's death. Right. Mm. And we got like serious at Thanksgiving table, you know, like really did. And with her in particular.
Yeah.
And she, like, the next week was like, I want to do something at school. Auntie, can you help me? I want to do this. Like, literally, it was like planning actions and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But so you posted on Facebook, like, look at this one. Like, my God, this is amazing. Like, you know, the children are going to save us all kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And I suspect it was a white woman, but I'm just going to, let's just say it was a white woman. Comes in with the like, oh, I've got all these resources. I can connect you with this, 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 this. And you're like, we don't need your help.
I said, I literally goes, I don't need your resources. Like, I have, I doubt your resources would be better than mine, and I didn't ask for resources. Like, I'm here praising her. Like, y'all always want to fucking fix everything. Don't nobody need your help.
On my pinned tweet, which is good. I think it's valuable.
I'm assuming we
PSA,
need you.
PSA for white folk. That would be on the, I don't know exactly how I phrased it, but like, the really irritating shit that we do that makes it hard to be in relation with us white people and paternalism.
Oh yeah, definitely. They can save the day.
Yeah, and this is like, again, I don't know if I've told John, is like my 1, 2, 3 like aha moment with that. Like, I might have tweeted about it.
No, you talked about it. We talked about it recently, even.
Yeah, but it literally had to have come. Someone isn't going to tell me that I'm being paternalistic and I'm going to like really like appreciate that unless like it comes to me to do something. And then immediately I'm like, oh, wait a minute, that's paternalistic. Holy cow. I can't believe I thought about that. You know what I mean? Like, you can't be after the fact, because like, you've done something and now it's like blaming your actions. It has to be kind of like, you have to have the thought, and then you have to be like, wait a minute, why am I thinking like that? Oh, that's fucking some paternalistic shit. What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like, it's not an aha moment. You can like soft talk somebody. Oh, no. Hey, what you
and
did
you know
there?
What? I could have explained it to her, but I didn't even. I was. I'm not doing it because no.
And again, it wouldn't work. It didn't matter. The thing for that person to get the aha moment is before they post. Right? Before
no,
they,
I mean, they could get it after, but I would have had to have been like so like kid gloves about explaining.
Even then, what would have happened is they would have understood this one thing to be paternalistic, but they wouldn't have understood paternalism and its relationship to supremacy, and they wouldn't have had the aha. They would have had level 2 respect for you and this engagement, but they wouldn't have taken away.
That's an assumption. I mean, y'all could discuss it how you want. I don't know. I mean, you had it with me, and I was the one who said it to you.
But again, it was in a very different. Like I said, it wasn't after I did the thing. You know,
it was after you did the thing.
No, it wasn't. I literally like verbalized. I just was like thinking this person actually like posted this to you and said
that's the same thing.
No. Nah,
that's her saying it. That's the only way she can say it on social media.
Not fair.
So, and she is a white woman, by the way. My last story is about the 5-year-old, our great niece, who are 6, actually. She's in first grade now. And I literally just asked her to, like, get me a soda or something. And she looks at me. She goes, Auntie, I really can't right now. I'm doing my homework, and my daddy says I really need to focus.
I need to focus.
Focus on your focus.
Can I just say, too, like, all of our nieces, like, I don't know, people think their kids are, you know,
they're
attractive.
They're so gorgeous.
Or this
it's disgusting.
That. But...
It's really absurd.
Whoa.
It's really ridiculous.
And the youngest one there, come on.
She is 2 months.
She's been like literally like a showstopper. Like, she should have been like Gerber, like baby of the year.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, I keep
gorgeous.
Telling her parents they should just get her
model.
Some headshots and she'd be good
for
to go.
For real. That, all that hair, those eyes, she's gorgeous. Yeah, I mean, she's her mom is a model, so let's
literally.
Not like pretend that like it's not good
and her
genes.
Dad's not any hard on the eyes himself, so yeah.
No, yeah.
He's a good looking chap.
Yeah, you know what he is? He's like the Prince of Brooklyn, dude. Like, honest to God, like for
listen,
real.
He's gonna be so happy to hear that. That's hilarious. I can't wait to tell him you said that.
But he is though. He is like the most BKest dude I've ever met in my entire life, through and through. Everything about it, like, you know the Fantasia song. Like, I want a good man.
Yeah,
6 foot. Yeah, that's him, dude. He's Prince of Brooklyn.
I don't know if she was thinking about him, but he is the Prince of Brooklyn. Shout out to him.
And you know,
I have to say this.
I have to say this to my nephew. The different dudes' age and paunch differently.
Yeah.
You know, carry the weight and stuff.
Yeah.
He's managed, I would say it's like a rare feat, but like he's gained weight in a manner that's like not, I don't know, like he's not a huge belly or nothing. Like his waist is the same, but I don't know. It's impressive.
Yeah, it is pretty impressive. I mean, he's great. The other thing I wanted to talk about was Marshawn Lynch.
Oh my God.
I saw this.
The Bear Grylls thing.
Yes. Did you see it?
Yeah. What was that
saying? Not the show, though.
Yeah. I'm going to just... Will you tell me to turn your headphones down?
No,
what do you...
I'm telling you to turn your mic down.
My mic down. Okay. Thank you for that.
Loud.
That's okay. Good, that's a good production notes. You can get like a grease board next time.
Yes. I'll need a little dry eraser.
Take it down.
Turn your shit down. So I actually wanted to play it because I literally almost peed myself. I was laughing so hard.
First of all, like, you know, Marshawn, like, I think they did it on purpose. Like they're going to get him out there and like Quit. Squeamish, no. But it's hilarious.
All right, here we go. So he went on that Bear Grylls, like, Into the Wild show where they like take him out to the wilderness. And usually it's somebody that's like, I don't know, like Gordon Levitt or like, you know, Mark Cuban, somebody who's like white and game, although Mark Cuban isn't technically white, but whatever, white presenting, whatever. Marshawn Lynch. Well, I'll let this play. It's 2 minutes, so you guys can listen. It's really funny.
He had me dangling off another cliff. Now I'm going to put paws on him. I'm putting these hands on him. And I don't know how I'm going to do it yet, because I know he be fighting stuff out here in the wild. So I got to make sure my attack is planned right and well.
Well, we'll take it step by step on this journey.
See, like, that's what I'm afraid of.
I don't know what's always ahead, but what I know is that together you're stronger, and you've just shown me you're made of stone stuff, and we'll both have our moments, and sometimes we'll fail, and sometimes we'll do well, and you just keep going until the end. That's the journey, you know?
I got you, boss.
So Marshawn was definitely what I'd describe as emotional at the end of that. You know, he was in kind of fighting thought. I've been there. I'm used to a bit of that tussle. What I do know in the wild is we need each other. He'll get over it. We need to keep pushing on. It's probably not going to be the first time he feels like that.
Okay, so having gone to all this effort to get the pig up, we're just going to take a little bit of it, okay, for dinner. Have you got that knife?
So Bear tell me like, yeah, so you got that knife? Bring it out. We finna chop up this pig. I'm talking about what?
Okay, stick it in there. And we'll take a slab like that. Right.
Where's X mark the spot at? Right here?
It's the square.
My man, I just went down there to get this pig. Why you can't chop it up?
Yeah, but just gently, just in and start cutting.
That ain't my style, man. Usually when I'm cutting my pig, usually it's already fried or something, though. You feel me? So it's straight nasty.
Okay, there you go. Okay, then look, come down here.
Hell no.
Come on, look.
What else you need?
It's an important part of the process.
No, yeah. That's some nasty right there.
Okay, look.
So here he's pulling the blood out.
I gotta blood you.
Hell no, not in my mouth, bro.
No, not in your mouth. Just your cheeks.
In my who?
Just like your.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. I'm one side.
I just wanted to put a little bit of blood on his cheek.
Little what?
Just a little marker of respect for the carcass.
Something such an old.
No. We should not be playing 400 feet up in the air. Oh, I'm telling you, man, this dude is crazy.
He tried to touch him with the blood.
He did touch him with the blood. I just thought it was so hilarious. And it's just like, what are you doing exactly? Like, nah, don't do that. So that was really hilarious. They need to give Marshawn Lynch his own television show, though, is my personal opinion, and put him with random white people and have him react to them.
Let me just say,
and their shenanigans.
He's like a brick shit house of a man. You know what I mean? Like 260 pounds of solid fucking muscle. Nothing about him says white blood on my face, dude. not a fucking ounce of his fiber says,
and then, like,
I'm cool with you wiping your fucking, like, bloody fucking hands on my face. No.
Yeah.
No.
And you're still bottoming out a little bit. And
no, that's your headphones? I turned mine way down.
No, I'm looking at it.
Okay. It's not coming out of this way, but all
okay.
Right.
Okay. And then when he bloodied one side of his face with the pig blood, and he's like, I'm cool, I'm one-sided. Like, that's a moment where this is not a part of the wilderness. Like, you have to put it on both cheeks. Let him be, instead of, like, tussling with him. Like, I don't even understand. To me, it just felt so much like, no, I'm going to do what I want to do to you no matter what. Like, it was just gross and nasty. The last thing I'll mention is that I'm on...
I didn't quite get that vibe.
I did, because literally he was like, don't touch me. Like, don't do this to me. What is the purpose of him having to...
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, you tell me.
I said I wouldn't touch him, period. Much less twice.
No, I can see the first thing, because it's like, it's not something he's used to or doesn't know. He's trying to, like, show him these things, whatever. But I just thought it was weird.
Yeah, but, you know, it doesn't matter.
What do you mean it doesn't matter?
It's like, there's all sorts of things you do, but you don't have to do them all. And he doesn't do every one of those things with everybody else. Like, usually it's like survival. Did spraying the fucking blood on your face help you fucking, like, stay warm through the night? No, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Bear.
Yeah. And also, I'm on Snapchat now, and I'm Snapchatting right now while I'm saying I'm on Snapchat.
Are you really going to snap? We've both tried to get on Snapchat multiple times. We're both like, whatever. You're doing it for real now?
No, I'm doing it for real now because I promised Ryan that I would do it. Shout out to her. And
fucking millennials.
These millennials forcing me on Snapchat. But I am on Snapchat. She can follow me at Leslie Mack. And I snapped a ton while I was in New York. That was what I said to Orion I was going to do. So I did snap a bunch while I was in New York. And I wouldn't say I had fun, but it was fun because my sisters are snapping now. And now that I follow them, that's kind of fun. Hold me, type in. Budge on. Live.
See, that just...
My story.
If you turn into like DJ Khaled on the Snapchat shit, I'm gonna be fucking pissed. If you like snapping shit, fucking like.
No, I'm not gonna snap that. I just snapped like from each like one place I went to. I like snapped, so it wasn't quite that dramatic. But
okay.
So I just sent that snap. So follow me on Snapchat if you want to, and snap me or whatever. I actually don't really know all of what happens to him, but I've been snapping and hopefully people will like it. What happened with you while I was gone, dude?
All kinds of shit, dude. Yeah. I saw we've been watching Viceland because I like it. And there was
You love Viceland.
I do. But they had this one about a polar bear attack. It was like, dude, you know, lives to tell about a polar bear attack. And I was like, man, that's kind of cool. Like, let's watch it.
See, that's some white people shit right there. No, my first thought is like, why were you anywhere near a polar bear?
You haven't gotten to fucking anywhere near the like your righteous indignation and incredulity at like white stupidness is like, You've already gone to 11.
This story should be under white people.
Well, it gets so much worse. It was so bad. It was like 30 minutes of like, I can't believe you did that. I can't believe you did that. I can't believe you did that. Like, they start with, we like to go where no one's been and out in the rugged, you know, we're a part of the Sierra Club. I'm like, okay, first of all, like, you're stupid for that. They take a bear fence. It's an electric fence to protect from bears. And I shit you not, this fucking bear fence is like 18 inches high. It's not even like all the weight and all the time it took to lug an electric fucking bear fence. And the rangers are like, that bear fence is a joke. They ain't gonna do shit. This is like the 1980 something. And they're supposed to be deep into the woods and not at all close to the water. So you get it, you know, 10 kilometers or more from the water's edge. They were like a stone's throw. Like, and when the guy is like, you know, weren't you supposed to be far from the water? This is pretty far here. It was a flat spot.
Is it though?
Is it? Is it really? So then they had like, there was so many things that were like, y'all are fucking stupid as shit. I can't believe it. But like, there was a mother bear and her cubs. And then there was another bear that they had to like shoo away and fire like flares at, like to get this bear to leave. And later that night, the bear they fired the flares at and were like shooing away was seen on a bluff overlooking their campsite, i.e. stalking them. Okay? Like, for real. Like, you shot a flare at this thing and it like, you're in its space, like in the deep Canadian wilderness. And then it goes and stalks you overnight. The fuck are you doing? And there was like 8 of them. Like, how hard would it have been for 2 of you guys to fucking be up all night? You sleep fucking 4 hours less? I'll take the morning shift and we won't get attacked by bears. Here's the flare gun. You know what I mean? Like, they just did dumb on top of dumb on top of dumb. And dude got ate by a fucking polar bear. Like, chomped him on the head, like, broken throat and all kinds of fucking fucked up. He lived. And he's still, like, all about that wilderness life. But it was just like, good God. Like, you couldn't have had, like, 30 more red flags that were like, the fuck are you thinking? When the bear stalked him. I just like, it's an animal. It's a, like, it's a, like a, you know, like a half ton, like wild animal that wants to eat you. And it sat there and stared you down all night long. Why would you stay again? Why would you fucking stay again? I don't want to be mean to the person, but like, you kind of maybe deserve to have your head bit by a polar bear. That was the dumbest shit ever.
Mm-hmm.
Super dumb.
White people are dumb.
You know, so we were talking, you and I, and I don't think you had ever heard this, and it surprised me because I feel like every white person my age knows this. The joke, and it's not a joke, it's racist. The joke was, how does every joke about black people start? And then the joke is you swing your head side to side looking for black people, right? And I'd made this comment to you, like, you know, and I'm not saying like I'm proud of this. I'm just like, oh, you know, like I knew the punchline to Justin Bieber's joke because I had heard that before. Like, you know, that ain't fucking new. And this is, you know, joke when white people do, they turn their head around. And you made a comment. You said, you know, that's weird. Like, that's like a white household and y'all are talking about black people in like racist, you know, stereotypical, like really like tropey ways and just like evil ways. But in a black household, it's not like these colonizing motherfucking, you know, invading fucking necromancer bastards.
It's like that now. Trust me. I'm telling you, these kids is woke out in these streets and that's exactly what the fuck they talking about.
Well, it used to be, you know, like, y'all mayonnaise can't dance and season fucking food for shit. Like, I just think it was
interesting. No, that's true. That was the genesis of most of our jokes about white people. Like, they were just, like, funny. And they certainly, none of them would not be told in front of white people.
Not only were
it was like, oh, y'all like mayonnaise and your potato salad sucks. Like,
And none of it was, it's not malicious, you know? It's not.
No, I would say they were cultural in nature. That's what they were really more about, cultural, like, touchstone-y things. It wasn't like some sort of like, y'all are inferior because of XYZ. Yeah. It was like, your chicken sucks. Like, y'all don't know how to, you know, do whatever.
I got you. So,
you look terrible in cornrows, like that kind of shit.
We're here in Michigan, and we talked about the Michigan militia with Dr.
Mstash.
We did
last week, yep.
Mm-hmm. And so, we get some commercials late at night that I'm just going to let this play.
You may not be a prepper now, but you will be. Whether the next disaster is man-made or wrought by Mother Nature, you need a plan. WiseFoodStorage.com's emergency gourmet meals are made in the USA, delicious, easy to prepare, just add water, and packaged and proportioned perfectly.
I'm just going to say they showed this chick boiling water and poured it into like a giant like a plastic bag.
The first time I saw this commercial, I tweeted that, you ever see a late night commercial that makes you think you really need to move? That's what I tweeted.
Literally, she's like all like just like totally nonchalant, like, and they're disaster preppers and they're like in some like palatial home on like a big kitchen table with like blonde blue haired kids eating fucking like disaster meals out of plastic bags.
Substance.
Why?
Why?
Why are you eating?
They
disaster?
Look like they're on a fucking farm.
It looks like it's some sort of fun, like, oh, let's eat a disaster meal.
Eliminating waste and creating a shelf life of up to 25 years.
And I can't believe it was made just by adding hot water.
It's got good flavor.
Closed roads, power outages that last days, weeks, even months, empty grocery store shelves with food nowhere to be found.
Okay, and I understand power outages. Months is maybe stretching it. I have never heard of a grocery store shelf out of food, I guess, other than like,
I mean, it can
Katrina.
Happen, but I mean, if that's what happens, like, your problems are going to be much bigger than a food preparedness, but whatever. I mean, we're not
preparing your family with delicious emergency food is easy, affordable, and something you can do today, so you're ready for whatever tomorrow may bring.
Are you going to be prepared if something catastrophic happens?
Call in the next 15 minutes and get your free sample. And as a bonus gift, get your free survival guide. Call 800-683-1450, 800-683-1450.
Their tag on it was less than $1 a serving. I don't know if that's a selling point.
Mm-mm-mm.
It's super cheap, too. But, yeah. Disaster prep here in Michigan. You might not be a disaster prepper now, but you will be.
All right, an hour in. Let's get to the fucking show.
But you will be.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
That's a six-year-old, by the way. She wasn't six when she recorded that, but she's six now. The one that said she needed to focus. So that's funny. So NASCAR was hit this week with a $500 million racial discrimination lawsuit for keeping black owner-owned teams out of races. Very interesting. This is Reuters reporting.
So they're suing NASCAR, that's like suing the NFL. They're suing the entity.
Yeah, so they're hit with the $500 million lawsuit accusing the auto racing body of racial discrimination for preventing black-owned teams and drivers from competing, including in the Sprint Cup Series. Terrence Cox and his company Diversity Motorsports Racing LLC filed a lawsuit late on Friday in the U.S. District Court in Manhattan against NASCAR, its parent company, International Speedway, and 18 different teams, according to court reports. The plaintiffs are also seeking an injunction requiring the defendants to, quote, fully integrate the African-American community. In a statement, NASCAR, of course, says that the lawsuit has no merit.
Mm-hmm. Well, what else am I going to say?
Yeah, what else am I going to say? The plaintiffs said they sued after NASCAR refused to let them field a team or join its Drive for Diversity program, and last year told them to cease contact. Citing NASCAR's website, the plaintiff said none of the 48 drivers in the Sprint Cup, NASCAR's top racing series, is black, and only one of the 18 teams has partial African-American ownership. They also said only one driver in NASCAR's Xfinity Series circuit is black. Motorsports remains the most racially segregated sport in the United States, the complaint said. NASCAR and IAC have been complicit in and supportive of the racially discriminatory environment that virtually excludes African Americans from meaningful participation. And the lawsuit seeks $75 million in compensatory damages and $425 million in punitive damages. The lawyer said any funds would go toward groups that the plaintiffs sponsor to boost minority participation in motorsports. And the company Diversity Motorsports was founded by Cox, who is chief executive officer, and Bob Schatt of Bob Schatt Motorsports, and is based in Mooresville, North Carolina. And, of course, NASCAR is based in Daytona but has an office in Manhattan. So that's interesting.
That is. You know, and it reminds me a little bit of sort of in the NFL right now, they have the Rooney Rule and they have some other diversity attempts. Mm. But same fucking shit, right? There's like, look at how many teams there are. 32.
Right.
I think there are zero black owners. There might be one not all white owner, or maybe a few. I think that one Khan, I can't remember his name. I think he's Middle Eastern. But anyway, ownership's, you know, almost all white, certainly all male. At the management and at the executive and at the general manager and the coach level, it's all male. I think there's right now, I think there's a hand. Is there two, three black NFL coaches? Not a lot. Mm. But once you go even down there, the like offensive line coach and quarterback coach, and like the fucking league is 70% black, right? The league is 70, the players are comprised 70% of black individuals. Why the fuck wouldn't you have 70%? Or at least a much greater percentage of representation in the management ranks. And so they have this Rooney Rule, and there's an article, I think, in Sports Illustrated this week about that it's just kind of become – there was an anonymous individual that said half of the interviews he had were, you know, tokenism. They were just totally worthless.
Mm.
He was there to satisfy the Rooney Rule.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what happens.
But I mean, here, now they're not even, they don't even have a Rooney Rule in NASCAR. They're just getting locked the fuck out.
Yeah, they're just like, yep, nope, not interested. See ya.
And, you know, like, you know, NASCAR, a racist old boys club. Shocker. Whoa, news at 11. I can't believe it. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. That would be that a sport derived from moonshining is somehow excluding black people and racist. I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
It's true. It's true.
So this came out. I thought it was kind of interesting because we see all this stuff about, like, you know, stranger danger and all these kind of things and blah, 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 blah. So a new study in California found that it's moralizing do-gooders that are more likely to do mischief than actual strangers. As a child, Ashley Thomas loved to go out by herself to a meadow about a 10-minute walk from her house in Ojai, California, playing on her own. Let her imagination soar. You can pretend you're the Queen of Sheba. Exploring made me feel independent and grown up. Once when she was in about first grade, she even found a snake. There's no way I would have picked up a snake for my parents. The reason I knew it was okay was I had also gone by myself to the library to take snake safety class. Yes, there was a class on snake safety. Ah, the old-time memories, the days when kids could play on their own without someone posting a video to shame their parents or call the police and have mom arrested and the child seized by social services. Thomas isn't an aging baby boomer telling tales of her grandkids. She's 30. Only in the past decade or so has no child left behind, no child left alone, become the social and legal norm in the United States. A doctoral student in cognitive science at the University of California, Thomas is the lead author of a recently published study designed to understand what's going on. After all, under most circumstances, the objective risk to children left by themselves is extremely low. The chance that a stranger will adopt or kill a child, not return a child, the great fear driving the norm, is about 0.00007%, or 1 in 1.4 million annually. It's much more dangerous to drive a child somewhere or even to walk with one across a parking lot than to leave a kid alone in a well-ventilated car. News reports and crime shows feed these exaggerated fears. Her co-authors noted that legal norms needn't follow inaccurate beliefs about risks. The fact that many people irrationally fear air travel does not result in air travel being criminalized. Parents are not arrested for bringing their children with them on airplanes. In contrast, parents are arrested and prosecuted for allowing their children to wait in cars, play in parks, or walk through the neighborhoods without an adult, they've noted. Indeed, parents safely making decisions every day without thinking about the other tiny risks. When you decide to park your car in a parking lot, you don't look up at the roof to see if a sniper could hit you. You don't think about whether the store you're taking your child to might get held up.
Right.
Nor should you, yet leaving your child alone even for a short time in safe circumstances can lead to a child abuse investigation. So the research suspects that the overestimating of risk reflects moral convictions about proper parenting. That's interesting. To separate the two instincts, they created a series of surveys asking participants to rate the danger to children left alone in five circumstances. A 2.5-year-old at home for 20 minutes, eating a snack, watching a Frozen movie, for instance, or a 6-year-old in a park about a mile from their house for 25 minutes. The reasons for the parents' absence were varied randomly. It could be unintentional, work, volunteer, charity, to relax, or to meet an illicit lover. Because the child's situation was exactly the same in all the intent cases, the risk should also be identical. Asked what the dangers might be, participants listed the same ones in all circumstances, with a stranger harming the child the most common, followed by an accident. The unintentional case might be slightly more dangerous because parents wouldn't have a chance to make provisions for their absence, such as giving the child a phone or instructions or parking the car in the shade. But the survey's respondents didn't see things this way at all. A mother's unintentional absence was seen as the safest for the child, and the mother's intentional absence for any reason and a mother's work-related absence was seen as more dangerous than any unintentional absence, but less dangerous than if the mother left to pursue an illicit sexual affair. Get the fuck out of here. That's so crazy. Going to work or unintentional is more dangerous than an illicit sexual affair. Okay. The same was also true for fathers. The moral disapproval informed their beliefs about the risk. That was even true when the survey explicitly separated the two factors, asking participants to rate leaving the child from 1, nothing wrong, to 10, highly unethical and immoral. That doesn't surprise me. And then it's changed over the last 10 years. That's leading to police and prosecutors and judges and jurors to overestimate risks. Julie Cater left her 3 daughters, age 8, 5, and 4, watching a video in a minivan while she went into an Evanston, Illinois Starbucks for 3 minutes. When she saw a police officer talking to the girls through the open window, she thought nothing of it until he returned and her 8-year-old started crying. She rushed out of the store and the situation deteriorated from there. Kaler, a public defender in a homicide division, she knew she hadn't broken any laws and she had 2 lawyers, her husband and her mother, to call to the scene. She wasn't arrested, but the state nonetheless initiated a child abuse investigation. They interrogated the kids, required a pediatrician exam, demanded that Kaler supply 2 references, and questioned them about her mental health, including whether she was on any meds. What if I was taking an antidepressant? Would that have affected the outcome of the case? The investigation determined the report of abuse was unfounded, but it taught Kaler the hazards of leaving her kid for even the briefest time under the safest of circumstances. Look at all that shit that got put into motion. Literally, you and I have talked about this when, like, we were kids. Like, shit, I had a key to the house and, like, locked that shit and let myself in at, like, 8 years old, you know? Like, latchkey kid. I was home alone for fucking hours at 8 and 9, literally. Like, school was over at 3 and mom came home at, like, 6:30 every day. Like, I don't understand the whole, like, hoopla about, you left your kid alone. And they, like, it's interesting that it's only the last 10 years. This moral blah.
Yeah. Speaking of morality. Yeah, Obama's female staffers came up with a genius strategy to make sure their voices were heard. Now, this is just interesting to me that they had to come up with a strategy, but whatevs. When President Obama first took office, the White House wasn't exactly the friendliest place for female staffers. Most of Obama's senior staffers, such as former Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel and Economic Advisor Lawrence Summers, were men who'd worked on his campaign and subsequently filled in his cabinet. If you didn't come in from the campaign, it was a tough circle to break into, says Anita Dunn, who served as a communication director until November 2009. Given the makeup of the campaign, there were just more men than women. Susan Rice, who's the current national security advisor, said she and other women had to shoulder their way into important conversations. It's not pleasant to have to appeal to a man to say, include me in that meeting. And even when they did make it in the room, female staffers were sometimes overlooked. So they banded together and came up with a system to make sure they were heard. Female staffers adopted a meeting strategy they called, quote, amplification. When a woman made a key point, another woman would repeat it, giving credit to its author. This forced the men in the room to recognize the contribution and denied them the chance to claim it as their own.
Wow.
We started doing it and made a purpose of doing it. It was an everyday thing, said one former Obama aide who requested anonymity to speak frankly. Obama noticed she and others said and began calling more often on women and junior aides. As the Post points out, they've gotten much better. Things have gotten much better for female staffers in Obama's second term. There's even a gender split among his top aides, and half of all White House departments are headed by women. I think having a critical mass makes a difference, White House senior advisor Valerie Jarrett said. It's fair to say that there was a lot of testosterone flowing in those early days. Now we have a little more estrogen that provides a counterbalance. Now, I don't like the whole like testosterone estrogen combo because it's very binary. However, it's interesting that even our president, this seeming liberal, forward-thinking black man, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Still brought these patriarchal notions and energy and ways of doing things into his first term. And it took these women being like, hey, let me hit you over a head with the fact that we're the ones doing all this fucking awesome work to for him to see. And it leads to this change. So I thought that was really interesting.
I was just now thinking why, like, because I'm the exact same way. Like, my lens racially pretty well defined. Patriarchy, not so much. You know, with race, like, I'm not nearly as apt to get fragile, but with patriarchy, I'm like, oh my God, please don't say I'm a misogynist, please, you know? So, and I'm sure there's lots of reasons, and other people have talked, you know, smarter about it than I am, but I feel like with race, even when you're doing fuck-ass shit as a white person, like, you kind of know it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you and I had this, not like difference of opinion, but like, there was a, you know, what percentage of white people are just truly uninformed and like, you know, like ignorant in the actual true sense of the word? They just don't know. Like, what percentage? And like, I'm like coming to the point that it's like zero. You know what I mean? Like, really, like zero. Cause like, there is like, there's a tiny ember of understanding that's there, even if you're not acknowledging it or have the words, like, you kind of know, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like, you just, like, I can't explain it, but you know, when the word criminal is said and everybody fucking thinks black and they're like, right. No, I didn't think that.
Right.
Like, why are you lying? Like, we know you thought black, like implicit bias is real. Like, right. Why do you feel the need to deny that you even have implicit bias? You know? So I feel like with race, there's always a little bit of like, okay, maybe there's something there. But with patriarchy, that's not nearly as recognized by
whom?
By men.
Oh, because I don't notice that shit.
No, I meant just like for me, even like just like, you know, race was easier to identify, but patriarchy, a lot. That's a thicker mound of bullshit.
It certainly is bullshit, that's for sure.
Speaking of bullshit, and this really, this whole story just kind of like, I don't think it delighted me, but I was just going to play an ad. What are you going to do to me, CNN?
What's going on?
I don't know. I was trying to play an ad, and I'm trying to make it not play the ad, but not won't load the page.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So a British filmmaker, an artist, got stuck aboard a ghost ship in the Pacific after the cargo farm went bankrupt. So, a British filmmaker's artistic journey has taken an unusual turn after a huge container ship she was traveling on became stranded in the Pacific Ocean. Vessel isn't stuck because of bad weather, pirates, or equipment failure. Nope, it's a case of bankruptcy playing out on the high seas. So, filmmaker Rebecca Moss boarded the ship, the Hanjin Geneva, as an artist residency program known as 23 Days at Sea. But now it's uncertain how long her voyage will last. She's still waiting on the Hanjin. Another week of inactivity. She's been communicating by Twitter because she's just off the coast of Japan, and Japan won't let the vessel come to port because it's bankrupt, and they don't know if they're going to get paid. Right? Like, this company's bankrupt. Like, you're going to let them come in and use your dock and fuel up and shit? Like, that's not like usually how it goes. Like, you're bankrupt. Like, figure it out, right? So the bizarre predicament began about 2 weeks ago. Hanjin Shipping Company, one of the world's biggest carriers, filed for bankruptcy protection in its home country of South Korea. The move left hundreds of people stranded across scores of ships that were turned away over fears they wouldn't be able to pay for things like docking and fuel. Hanjin has also been scrambling to stop creditors from having its vessels seized. Some people call the stranded vessels ghost ships. For Moss, whose film features absurd scenes like a person dressed as a frog bouncing on a pogo stick in a puddle. Okay, that's artist. I changed between emotions of amusement and anger and incredulity, she said in an interview with Vancouver Sun in the days after the stoppage. It is a dumb situation. According to Kimberly Phillips, and here's the this is the best part right here, because this is just like, I love this. According to Kimberly Phillips, the director of the Vancouver Gallery that runs the artist residency program in which Moss has been stuck in the middle of the ocean, offers a tremendous opportunity for the artist. It underscores perfectly the aims of the residency in the first place, she said. A consideration of time and duration unpinned from the cadence of everyday life, as well as an attempt to make visible a global system of seaborne freight that most of us remain blissfully unaware. So she's trying to, like, spin this girl's, this is my residency program, and it's bankrupt and it's fucked up, but oh, it's a wonderful opportunity.
Interesting.
So Moss, the artist, said, would become the Vancouver Sun, that she realized the ship's plight would become the aspect of my trip that my work would have to focus upon. All along, I had felt the sheer absurdity of this journey, but in the moment I was told we wouldn't even have a destination at the end of all this labor, I felt completely incredulous. The Hanjin Diva was meant to deliver Moss and its cargo to Shanghai, but now, like scores of other ships, its fate is uncertain. The artist said the captain had told everyone on board to conserve food and water. Phillips, if you remember, is the artist residency gallery individual. Meanwhile, is at pains to point out that Moss is far from alone in her predicament. We have noticed that this focus on a single artist caught within the immensity of an unsustainable capitalist system is eclipsing the experience of many hundreds of crew and officers in the same or far worse situation. She said.
Wow.
I just love that it's like, it's her program. Like, your artist residency program is bankrupt and this person is stranded. You're like, it's a wonderful opportunity for their art. I don't know why they're complaining. They have to consume food and water. Why are we focused on her? This giant capitalist system with other people that are far worse. That cracks me up. I don't know why. That just made me laugh.
Well, something that made me laugh, you know how I'm totally obsessed with turtles.
I do.
So I saw this headline said, sex-crazed Galapagos turtle fathers 800 save species.
What?
This is in Newser. Newser says that the most tireless and passionate proponent of saving the Galapagos tortoise from extinction is ancient, lecherous. What the hell? No, I don't want to play that. Is ancient, lecherous, and not particularly attractive, but those attributes are apparently a big hit with the ladies. Gentle reader, meet Diego, a lusty 100-plus-year-old tortoise who has helped bring his kind back from the brink of extinction by having copious amounts of sex with any female in sight.
Please clap.
Fucking A. That gets an applause for sure.
He's a very sexually active male reproducer.
He's a centenarian? Yeah. 100-year-old. He's fucking, wow.
100-plus. Says Washington Tapia, an actual tortoise preservation specialist at Galapagos National Park. Quote, he's contributing enormously to the repopulating the island. How enormously? Diego is baby daddy to an estimated 800 offspring, or to better put it, a genetic test 4 years ago showed that, quote, he was the father of nearly 40% of the offspring released into the wild on Española, the tortoise's native island.
You know, honestly, though, that just means that there is a genetic marker that is, you know, so the genetic maybe like a mutation happens, and then that mutation is more survivable, right? Yep. Darwinian theory. Mm. So his mutation is fucking horny, dude.
They got to be out there in the streets.
He'd be banging it out. We're going to repopulate the shit out of this island, dude.
He's a globe-trotting charmer, apparently, taking his name from the San Diego Zoo, where Tapia says he was taken sometime between 1900 and 1959 by a scientific expedition. He was returned to the Galapagos Island in 1976 to get down to work in a captive breeding program.
Yo, dude, wait a minute. So first of all, he was fucking held captive for 20 years.
Yeah.
He's out swimming. He's youthful.
Yeah.
He's like, damn, dude, I've got it. I've got it. I'm in a tank in my prime for 20 years.
Yeah, dude.
And then it's like, whoa, I'm back on the island. Mm-hmm. I'm fucking Viagra, dude.
Yep. As his kind had at one point dwindled to 2 males and 12 females on Espanola. Diego, it turns out, takes his job very seriously. Tough work, but some tortoises got to do with the AFP snarks. While the Houston Chronicle runs through a primer on tortoise mating that includes a tidbit that female giant tortoises are silent while the males make a sound similar to a cow's moo. Today, at least 2,000 tortoises have been released into the wild. It's a population that's in pretty good shape and growing, which is the most important, Tapia says. For more on that and how you can, we'll put some links on to how you can help more with that. But I just thought it was pretty funny. Good on you, Diego.
Yeah, dude. Diego.
Diego the tortoise.
Fucking the shit.
Fucking, man. 40%?
There was 2 males and 12 females.
Good Lord.
And now there's like 800 of his offspring.
Good Lord.
Good. He's happy. He's clearly in his lane.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of sex, this week a 3D model of the clitoris was unveiled in France. Pupils across France will be able to use the first full-size anatomical model of a clitoris in their sex education classes. Considering all the technological, medical, and scientific achievements humans have made, this seems to have taken a long time. The distribution of this model has been possible due to 3D printing technology, but even three-dimensional MRI scans, which previously produced the most accurate representations of the clitoris, only became available in 2009. But it was well worth the wait. Truth is, you might struggle to gain pleasure from a tool you don't even know you have. In 2016, women finally know without speculation what the whole of their sexual organ looks like. And for many, it won't be quite what they imagined. Now, first of all, I have not been able to get this entire thing out of my mind, like, period. For exactly what they said was, if you don't even know what you've got, what you're working with, what the mechanics of it is, like what happens, it's impossible to like know why your body reacts a certain way when something happens, when it doesn't happen. I don't know. I just think it's like truly revolutionary. What do you think?
Well, and I, so to your point, like, you know, not knowing, like, the external equipment for a man is much easier to figure out.
Sure.
You know, you can fucking, what was that TV show we were watching where the one, it was a gay dude and he was given a blowjob to a straight guy that thought he was maybe bi, and the straight guy's like, I don't like it, stop. And he got really upset. Mm. So there was a straight woman that's like, no, you're giving it like a gay dude. You got to give it like a woman. And he's like, oh, okay. So he comes back. He's like, I kind of like smacked it and I slapped it and I looked at it and I was like, ew, he loved it. But
yeah.
Because the clitoris is inside more, like, obviously you can't, like, figure things out, like you said. I had always heard and knew that there was, like, quite a lot more inside, right? Like, the external
right, they,
part.
Right, they liken it to, it's like the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah,
so the,
yeah.
There's the tip that you can see, and then almost everything else happens internally.
Correct. So, that's what I knew that, right?
Right.
But this 3D...
But you didn't know what it looked like.
No, like these, like, I don't want to call them like the wing pieces, but like...
Well, they call the one piece is being referred to as the wishbone.
Okay, so the wishbone.
The outer part of it. And then the inside part, that's like the part that gets super engorged, that actually hugs the vagina, people are referring to as the tulip. So...
Yeah, the tulip was new to me. I didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like shocked by it. It makes a lot of sense about a lot of things, which we've talked about privately. But the thing that... a few things that I think are revelatory about it. One is that, you know, being able to have conversation about female sexuality that is not reproduction-based, but pleasure-based. Because without this information, it's impossible to have that conversation.
Hear, hear.
So that's the first thing that I think is just amazing. And the second thing is finally having, you know, visual aids and evidence to show that the vagina is not the female equivalent of the penis, but the clitoris is the female equivalent of the penis. And this analogy is pretty good because what they said was, you know, instead of thinking... You know, you should think of a penis as an external clitoris and a clitoris as an internal penis. So when you look at it that way, and actually when you see it, it actually makes perfect sense because, you know, we all start with the same sexual genitalia and then the hormones kick in and we start to change in the womb. So the same cells morph themselves, you know,
yeah.
And it never made any sense to me at all. Why would... just the entire situation, knowing that testes are the female equivalent of ovaries, for example, you know, this, it never made any sense. Yeah, the whole vagina is a penis.
And I don't, you know, I feel like the, I don't have that distinction the same way that you do.
Yeah.
I think that there's definitely a, you know, binary male, female, boys have a penis, girls have a vagina, right? Like that's the thing that you have. And, you know, it would be a very different story if boys had a penis, girls had a clitoris.
Yes.
That's a very different story, right?
Completely different story.
From Genesis on up, you are thinking of the woman and her clitoris as the analogous to your penis. That would make you treat the clitoris different. It would make you think of the clitoris different. Yeah, it'd be very different. But it would be very, that just right there.
Those two have, things, I
boys
think,
boys have
just
a penis,
huge.
Girls have a vagina, yes. Girls have a clitoris.
Girls have a clitoris.
Yeah.
And so now, the focus is on the pleasure center for women's sexual organs and not just the reproductive.
Yeah.
Because that would be like saying boys have, you know, girls have a clitoris and boys have balls.
I mean, but, and I
how
guess,
does that work?
But there's also like, it to me, like, when I say that, like, this didn't surprise me, it was pretty obvious, like, because there's so much other, like, you know, in my own life, like, you know, I've been with women and you, and I know how to pleasure a vagina, and I know it's not, you know, and for most women, like, it's very common for orgasms to be clitoral based and not vaginal, not through penetration, right? Not through, you know, there are absolutely times and circumstances and women that can have, you know, orgasms through vaginal penetration, and, you know, maybe their anatomy and the G-spot and things are shaped differently, but that's not the norm, right? The norm is the clitoris. So I feel like when it's like learning that the clitoris is the equivalent of the penis is like, duh. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. That wasn't a news flash to me, but the
yeah, but you didn't think of it that way.
Well, like I said, the framing, right? And
right.
Just the
and
world, the
pretty,
world
pretty
doesn't
cool.
think of it as boys have a penis, girls have a clitoris. And
right.
that would be a very, and again, the, not just anecdotal evidence, but like when individuals transition from female to male, the clitoris is turned into a penis. Like that literally, like through the hormones and other things that, you know, happen or done, the glands and tissues and nerve endings that make up the clitoris are formed into a penis. Like, that's literally how it happens. So, like, that didn't surprise me at all. But like I said, the tulip was that was kind of mind-blowing. Like, I knew the clitoris was a lot more than the clit, like the tip of the iceberg. I didn't know that it was, like, the tulip. Like, it's kind of fucking – that's a lot. Like, that's a lot. There's a lot more clit down there than I thought. that was kind of like, and that's 2016. That's kind of sad that it took 2016 to realize that there's a lot of clitoris. Like, the fuck, we don't have like I don't know, like, is dissection not a thing anymore? Like, was that not possible?
No, just who gives a fuck about women's pleasure centers?
Yeah,
I mean,
no,
I think
one
you're
ever
missing, like,
doing that.
Why would they care?
That's my point. Like, 2016 it took to fucking figure out. Jesus.
I mean, 2009 is the first, like, 3D MRI that was taken out. I remember when that happened. We covered it on the show. Well, not in 2009. I didn't even know the show then, but we did talk about that previously on the show. But I think this 3D thing just makes it so much more, like, I don't know. To me, it was just, like, amazing. So everybody should check that out. I hope that they get it everywhere, and hope it comes from France over here soon, and we can start, you know, really changing these horrible and, you know, patriarchy soaked, inadequate conversations about female sexuality. So let's have that happen.
Yeah. So this is our stay here in Michigan, ongoing fuckery with Flint, and I would say I don't know what you call it, but, like, when you put a state or city into this emergency management, like, are you removing their agency? Is that what's happening? Like, it's unbelievable how
it is moving their agency.
So after the court had threatened, the state of Michigan has now removed Flint's ability to sue. So days after Flint Mayor Karen Weaver, wonderful shot of here, served notice that her city might file a lawsuit against the state of Michigan over the Flint drinking water crisis, the state removed Flint's ability to do so. Though Flint has not been under a state-appointed emergency manager since April 2015, the state still exerts partial control over the city through a five-member receivership transition advisory board, whose members are appointed by Governor Rick Fuck Snyder. The board moved quickly to change the rules under which Flint is governed so the city cannot file a lawsuit without first getting approval from their own appointed board. In other words, Flint can't sue the state without getting the state to sign off on it first. Good luck with that. And it's just like under cloak of fucking darkness, like days later. And it's just like, the whole thing just fucking is just so gross. And that half of black residents in the state of Michigan live in cities that are under this kind of management.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
You know, like, literally, that just think about that. Like, on a local level, like, all these fucking people, like, that, you know, when we're talking about protests and actions, number one, get a job. It's like, fuck you. Number two, you know, go out and vote. You want to do something, go out and vote. Go out and vote. And yeah, they voted. And guess what? Their vote is worthless. It got taken away, and five fucking dickbags appointed by Governor Rick Snyder now have all the fucking say in their city.
Mm.
You know? Like, what does that mean? Like, what? How you want to talk about disenfranchising? Jesus Christ. Fucking ID laws, all this fucking horse shit. And now it's like, if I was in a city under management and everyone I voted for didn't fucking matter, really, what's the point? Because there really is why you can't look somebody in the eye and say you should vote because of this, because there is no point. It didn't matter to them right now, their lives today. It did not matter.
Mm-mm-mm. Wow. 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 Yeah. I don't know. This state is so fucked up. I talk about it all the time. I just post up and I just put Michigan, because I just, like, every day I just see this, you know, the effect of this quote unquote business first government. And more disturbingly, I hear so many people we know and love that talk about the things that happen in the state as if they were inevitable. Well, what choice did people have? They had to do something. It's really the dual complacency and apathy here, it's stifling. It's like thickening the air.
Yeah. What's the powerful black woman in Detroit with the water group, the five women? What's her name?
Oh, Monica.
Monica.
Yeah.
So she talks, you know, first of all, she's been doing this for 30 years, yep. Right? Forever. She's got a high level view.
Monica, right? Lewis Patrick.
Yeah. You know, she has seen and been witness to, and she understands the complexity of stuff going on in a way that, you know, I don't say nobody could, but like really just powerful, right? So she talks about it and not exactly in these words, but it really does seem like there are much larger, nefarious, uber wealthy oligarchy type forces that are making deliberate controlled chaos so that they can privatize water. And I'm talking like Michigan's home to fucking, you know, these lakes, these Great Lakes are like fucking a third of like the waters, the fresh water in the fucking world or the country. It's like something outrageous, right? Like an astronomical amount of fresh water is bordered on here in Michigan. And now you're talking about international waterways, right? It's got a border with Canada. It's got fucking, you know, rivers and ways to fucking connect from Michigan all the way down to the fucking, you know, Atlantic and the fucking Gulf. Like, you can really do a lot through Detroit and Michigan and the waterways. And I don't know exactly, you know, like I said, I don't know what her vision is or how she taught it, but it just feels like there's something just big and nefarious. And this, what is it, Ovelia or Velio or what's that water company?
I can't remember. Vidalia, some shit like that.
I can't remember. I'll look it up. But they're jackasses. Buying shit up and just,
you jackasses.
It just seems like here in Michigan there is a resource that somebody is aware is going to be valuable in some incredible way down the road, and they're doing things to shore that up.
Mm-hmm.
And our And have, elected officials are cool.
I refer to it very, very specifically. This is my
Viola,
take on
that's it.
Viola. That this has been in this state, it's been a long-term play to displace brown and black people and separate them from their assets and to pave the way for rich people to get richer. That's it.
Yeah, well, I said divest them of their assets and use government positions and influence to move public money into private hands.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what's happening.
Yeah. Yep, that's pretty much it. In Olympic news, do we still have Olympic? I know,
yeah,
this is
I
like
do.
Do you still have Olympic news music?
It's gonna be the bad one.
Okay.
Night.
Right, just stop. I can't. Anyways, four Paralympians just ran the 1,500 meter faster than anyone at the Rio Olympics. Even the fourth place finisher would have won gold in August. On Sunday, Fouad Baraka of Algeria finished the 1,500 meter race in just 3 minutes and 49.59 seconds at the Marconia, Stadium in Rio de Janeiro. That's fast, so fast that if Baca had finished with that time at that exact stadium in August, he would have beat out Matthew Centurris Jr. of the U.S. for the Olympic gold medal. Centurris finished the final in 3 minutes and 50 seconds. Unfortunately for Baca, he wasn't racing in the Olympics. He was racing in the Paralympics, where not one where not one or two runners finished ahead of him, but three. Excuse me. He ended up placing fourth in the men's 1500. The T-12-13 final, a race for the visually impaired. In front of him was bronze medalist Henry Kirwa of Kenya, silver medalist Tamiru Dimisa of Ethiopia, and gold medalist Adelpha Baka, who is the brother of the fourth place Fode, who came in at 3 minutes, 48 seconds, 48.29 seconds. Now, note I said T-12-13 final, which is visually impaired, so there were no blades involved.
Yeah, I was waiting for that.
No, these are just visually impaired runners, and they ran faster. So I'm wondering, like, what would stop them from competing in the main Olympics?
So, and I just, a point of reference, the 1500-meter race is a race typically run, you know, it's going to vary its speed. And they did say that the one in Rio was particularly slow. Mm. So, you go out and you run the race based on the, you know, it's a middle distance, right? You're not going to sprint every fucking time. Like, you have to go as fast as you need to go. But if you don't need to sprint all the way, like, you wait until that last lap and then you sprint that last 50 seconds. So you try to keep yourself in position. And they went really slow. Like, they were running, like, 51, 53, 52-second laps. I was shocked when they – literally, when they got to, because there was people that were running the, I forget what other distance, like the 10,000 or the 5,000, and they were running laps faster than all of them did at that 1500. I'm not saying that this isn't, you know, these individuals didn't run amazing speeds. They did, but the Rio was also very slow. And I don't know why they you couldn't, and I think it might be difficult to, because you have to have a, when you run visually impaired, don't you run with somebody else? What do you do? I don't know. Do they have a video of it?
I don't know.
Because I know that visually impaired distance runners run with somebody else. But yeah. This is a sprint. How could you run with somebody else?
I don't think
else?
They do. I think that they just have, like, I don't know how it works. I haven't seen the video, but
it was really fast. I see the finish, and there's four people.
They're all there.
They're all there running, yeah. And there's no...
They probably don't have rules about touching like they do in the other one, I would figure.
Yeah, you're probably
that would be
right
difficult
about
to have that rule there.
And there's probably some other audio cues
and
about
maybe
the
that's
track.
Why. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, they have audio cues anyways, like for each lap and stuff. Like,
yeah, here's the video. There's no assistance.
I didn't think there was any assistance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They have lane assignments and everything.
Yeah.
Huh. Oh, for fuck's sake. This is literally NBC, fuck you.
Uh-oh.
Fuck you, cock. Fucking goddamn NBC, Comcast, Universal. This content is not available in your country. Are you fucking kidding me?
Okay,
the Paralympics, I hate you.
I know, they're the worst. So anyways, you know what? Let's not go there. Anyways.
It's the Paralympics. Whatever. You're barring the Paralympics? Yeah. Come on. Get out of here.
This week in hashtags. So one that I thought was really interesting was hashtag IAM911. It was 911 dispatchers sharing their story. You guys should check that out. It's pretty interesting. Just them talking about their experiences on the job as, you know, a component of first responders. Even though they're not considered that by technically. So it's pretty interesting to hear. And sometimes they're the only people that manage an emergency, like, period. Like, they're the ones that make all of those critical decisions. So I thought that was interesting. We also now know a 911 dispatcher, which is interesting as well. Quite well. She'll be coming to Jamaica with us. So that'll be fun to talk about all that, her new job. And then the other one that I'll just mention is Charlotte protests, which protests are going on right now. I hear someone was killed during protests. I don't know. There was a shooting. I don't know who shot and all of that, but I'll be keeping a close eye on that and sending good vibes and all of that to them. And then we have, do you have music for this?
What's the next piece?
Are you in the same fucking notes on
I
it?
I am. Or? I'm trying to get the next piece. Where's the name? The Charlotte protest. Oh, wait a minute. We have a clown car again?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I don't have that cue.
Okay, never mind. Anyway, so this is stuff from the campaign. You don't have to do that. Thanks, though.
Check it out.
This is a video.
Who says
news are you doing
has
it?
To be cold and on your screen. Okay. I say it's warm and on your face. The real news is on the streets, and it sounds like this. Ba-ba, ba-ba. This is Jordan Klepper, Fingers the Pulse. This past summer, Trump flag wavers spouted a lot of theories about Hillary Clinton's health. We see the coughing fits.
She's had, it seems like, a number of blood clots.
What on earth could be the reason behind Hillary Clinton's bizarre behavior?
Look, it almost seems seizure-esque to me.
Turns out they were sort of right.
We're now learning she's been diagnosed with pneumonia.
If the crackpots halfway nailed one theory, maybe their truth fingers were in deeper than mine. I had to find out.
I headed to Trump rallies in the crucial swing states of Ohio and Wisconsin to discover what his supporters know that the rest of us don't.
Do you think it's worse than pneumonia?
Way she looks, yes.
So what do you think's going on?
It could be Parkinson's. It could be MS.
It could be AIDS.
What makes you think she has AIDS?
Way her husband used to be.
So you think Bill had AIDS?
Yes.
So how did Bill Clinton get AIDS?
Probably messing around with Magic Johnson.
What?
What? That's the natural conclusion?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Whoa.
Clinton and Magic Johnson. What else do they know?
They're saying there's like a double of her.
Yeah. Do you think there was a Hillary Clinton double?
Yeah.
I think anything's possible when it comes to doubles.
Wow.
Stop.
A Clinton double. Who knew? So I printed out two identical photos to see if they could see what we couldn't. And which one's the body double?
I'd say that one.
So what is it about this one that makes you think it's not Hillary Clinton?
That the little thing on her cheek is very obvious, and the scarring or whatever this is down in her throat is different.
They look a ton alike, right?
It's the same photo. It's the same
photo. This one was so good. You know why? Because usually the people like play along with them and like pretend like they're speaking like they're making any sense. And this guy went a whole different way, and I love it. Go ahead.
Younger.
You think this looks younger?
Yeah.
But don't you think if you just look at something for long enough and you kind of have a paranoid mind, eventually you'll find a difference and make a big deal of it?
Yeah, I think something like that's possible. Yeah.
Which one are you more attracted to?
This one.
That one. Yeah. Uncovering Hillary's doubles is one thing, but what could they tell us about our current commander-in-chief?
Barack Obama is a Muslim. He's a terrorist. Nobody will ever tell me different.
We don't even know if he's a citizen.
Yeah, if you don't look at the birth certificate, there's almost no evidence there.
He's a Muslim, a terrorist, and no one will tell me any different. We don't even know if he's a citizen.
Exactly.
So there's nothing Barack Obama could do to prove that he was born here?
If there was maybe witnesses that were attendants at his birth.
Like his mother? Do you listen to his mother?
No. She has motivation to lie.
So you don't trust Donald Trump's birth certificate either?
Yeah, because he's been here forever.
Well, how do you know? What's your proof?
Well, his parents and...
But they're biased. I'm talking about, like, people who could
Why
be their
own. Why would they be biased?
Well, like, I'm just using your logic against you.
Okay.
He acts like a Muslim. He talks like a Muslim. He also does the Muslim principles as far as jewelry is concerned.
Jewelry?
Yeah, jewelry.
Wait till you hear this one.
I shudder. Because... This is like that
when the people come at you with the black abortion thing, it's like the fuck are you talking about? Like this right here, first of all, the Muslim jewelry thing.
Yeah, just let him explain. It's fascinating.
Certain months of the year, not wearing his wedding ring. Uh-huh.
That's a deep cut. You want me to connect your necklace to your Christianity?
Why would you do that?
Well, you just taught me it. I didn't even know people were connecting jewelry to religion.
Muslims don't wear.
Is that a Jew watch?
I told you he's good, man. He's good. He is good.
And one of the most unbelievable discoveries yet.
Barack Obama had a big part of 9/11.
Which part?
Not being around, always on vacation, never in the office.
Why do you think Barack Obama wasn't in the Oval Office on 9/11?
That I don't know. Let's get to the bottom of that.
Wow.
Get to the bottom of it. It's going to get to the bottom of it.
They also had new truths about the media cover-up of Trump's surging popularity.
I don't think the media really portrays all the African-Americans that support Donald Trump. As much
really?
As
so
the fuck?
What should we be portraying? Where are these African-Americans? When you literally look out across the 400, 500 people here, we don't see any.
He's like, where are they? He like grabbed him by the shoulders, like spun around, is like, show them to me. Where are they? Oh my God.
They'll wave. Wave, white people.
Yeah. It's like a Dave Matthews concert. Except Dave Matthews actually has African Americans in his band. Tell me when you see somebody who is not white.
Here, right here. Thank you, brother.
Donald Trump don't even know how much a loaf of bread or a dozen of eggs cost.
So you don't even support Donald Trump?
No.
Okay, so he didn't work.
It's perfect.
She said amen to him.
Amen.
Turns out they got one wrong. But the rest of their theories can be backed up with ironclad sources. And what's your source?
Just Facebook or Twitter. I mean, everything.
So you'll look at, like, facts and bull, and you'll put it all together.
Exactly.
So outside of having no proof, what proof do you have?
I don't have any.
You don't have any proof?
My opinion.
Your opinion.
Do I have proof? No. Do I have articles? No.
But your mind is made up without any information.
My mind is made up.
Good enough for me.
Just wow, dude.
So good, right?
I just don't understand folks like that. There's like low information, and then there's deliberately no information.
Yeah. I blame the media partially, which is this next clip I wanted to play, which is Kiernan Mayo. She's talking about. Well, let's just let her explain everything. Here, what she has to say. Uh oh, what happened? Why isn't it playing? Wait a minute. What happened here?
Strange. Who's fucking up the show?
Okay,
no, there is anything about this campaign at this point that isn't vile, isn't offensive to African Americans in particular, but to all Americans, to all thinking Americans. And at this point, we're parsing apart the crazy when in fact we've gotten to such a height that it's challenging how all of us are interpreting the news. I think all of us have lost our lens. Certainly media has, myself included, yourself included. The inundation that this has been in our collective psyche to have to try to make sense of this person who is espousing such terrorist language in his speeches, in his extemporaneous off-the-top conversation, everything about him, my heart is palpitating at this point because I've given a lot of thought to Donald Trump and I'm tired of thinking
about
him.
Let me ask you this, as an observer of the culture, as someone who has criticized and observes media, you said, you know, we've lost our lens.
We have.
It's interesting when you're sitting here as a person who is objective and who questions people, there is a difference between being objective and pointing out the truth or not pointing out the truth. It is also an obligation to point out absurdity, to point out lies, to point out the truth, not to ignore them and pretend that there is some false equivalency to something that is not the norm.
And that would be more like objectivity, but instead we frame this as though this is the norm, as though this is okay, as though this is a standard that we're all comfortable with. It's concerning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
More than concerning.
She's just so simple with it. Just like, y'all are fucked up. And that's how people get dumbass information.
It started with the ratings. That very first debate, he was the rage. They got the best ratings
before
ever
that
got.
When he announced it, he called Mexicans rapists and murderers. Like, to me it was like, oh, this gets a lot of, everybody's talking about this now, so let's all talk about it more.
This last week he had a press conference where he's going to make some big announcement, and it's supposed to be a big thing. He was going to make an announcement. It was about the birth certificate, the birther. And it was like 90 minutes, and it was about his hotel and all this fucking shit. He's great, the greatest hotel. Fucking like generals on stage talking about how great he is and he's the best person for the country. And like NBC, CNBC, MSNBC all stayed with him. Literally stayed with him. When was the last time Hillary Clinton had a presser?
Hillary Clinton.
With
when was the
minutes.
Last time Barack Obama, our actual had president, a had a presser that
with
was covered
minutes,
like
yeah.
that? Fuck out of here.
For 20 fucking minutes.
Seriously.
Of generals just talking about how great he is, how great he is.
Disgusting.
And they couldn't go away. They couldn't cut away. Because if they cut away, then they're not going to get him fucking to come on there, whatever. So he finally comes out. He had three goddamn sentences. The birther thing is over. It's, you know, he's whatever. He like ended it somehow by, you know, doing the thing he always does, being hypocritical and like basically contradicting like his tweets from the last fucking like 10 years, right? So they gave him that. They literally gave him that. He conned like 90 minutes of fucking airtime. They're totally complicit, media, in the worst way. The worst.
The worst. The worst.
Are we, is it This Week in Apology?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. So sorry. So sorry. That I was such a
this, I just literally, I'm glad you're doing this one. I can't.
Yeah. So actually, this one is a shout out to Rodimus Prime from the Black Guy Who Tips. He was hoping that we would discuss this particular apology where a former Kansas State, I say former because this bitch got kicked out of school, former Kansas State University student has apologized for a Snapchat image that went viral with many sharing it on social media as a symbol of racism on campus. Now, even that framing's bad. Now, it is a symbol of racism on campus, not it, appearing as, but sharing whatever
as,
the fuck.
Sharing it as, sharing as it. A symbol. Mm. Yeah.
Paige Shoemaker, racist bitch, who was a student at Kansas State at the time, said she and her friend Sadie Meyer, who is not a Kansas State student, put on clay cosmetic facial masks and were Snapchatting with a friend who was black. He made a joke about us being black now. Shoemaker wrote in a text message, "We then took a picture thinking it would be okay. Our intent was never to offend anyone." Mm. The photo showed her and her friends with their faces blackened and had the caption, "Feels good to be N-word. I'm truly sorry that I offended so many people. I'm the furthest thing from racist. I am an incredibly accepting person. I would never do something to intentionally poke at a race. I understand that me having black friends doesn't make it acceptable for me to use the word that I did. I definitely learned to make sure I am more aware of my audience to never use a derogatory term."
So
that was her first attempt at the apology.
I'm gonna give a paraphrase, make sure I have it correct.
Yeah.
I'm totally not racist.
Yeah.
Please, I know I shouldn't have said it, mm-hmm. and I'm sorry I got caught.
And I have black friends.
And I'll make sure I don't get caught next time.
Yeah. Well, I'll say it. I just won't say it in front of you black people.
And really, it was funny. It wasn't just I have black friends. It was like there was a weird, like, I know that my black friends don't allow me to say that.
Mm.
You know, it was like a left-handed I have black friends.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
yeah.
I have black friends, but they mm-hmm. don't let me say that.
Mm-hmm. So anyways, they kicked the bitch out. And, of course, black student union leaders were like, you know, I think her response showed that she didn't grasp the severity of what she did. So what would you grade the first apology? So let's just start there.
Read her first sentence again.
Let's see. She said, "I'm truly sorry that I've offended so many people. I am the furthest thing from racist.
So I'm truly sorry that I've offended so many people.
Yeah.
It's not I'm sorry that I did this thing that was horrible and racist.
Nope.
So I'm gonna go zero. Mm-hmm. It's not. It's
already.
Yeah. I just.
It's negative because she then said the audience thing is what got me. It's like I'm not even sorry I actually said it. I just make sure that whoever I say it to won't be somebody that will say some shit to the rest of you about it.
I'll make sure the person that I'm Snapchatting with ain't gonna fucking put my shit on blast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, I'll be smarter next time.
Yeah.
You know what it is? She's gonna tell that black joke, but she's gonna spin her head around.
So here's her second one. Are you ready? She wrote this one. Mm-hmm. "I just want people to know that I didn't put the facial mask on with the idea of taking a racist picture. It was meant for a select group of friends on my Snapchat. I'm so incredibly sorry for all the lives that I've affected. I don't truly understand the daily struggle that African Americans go through, but I know that it's not easy life. I wouldn't never intentionally scrutinize or make fun of anybody. I'm one of the most giving people you'll ever meet. I understand that there will be people that don't accept my apology, but please know how sorry I am for my actions. I just wish people would come to me and ask me about what happened and try to get to know me before they judge me off the picture and anyone else's opinion on the internet." That's it.
Let me center it on me.
Let me
end with I'm a victim and I want people to stop judging me by this one thing that I did that. You know, that's the other thing too. Like, I just really like we're going to fuck up white people. This is a big one. There's fuck ups you're like not going to recover from. This is one. Like, change your name, get a different fucking, go to a different school. go to JUCO in like a completely different state.
Yeah.
Be like, nah, that wasn't me. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, totally completely change it up, right? Because you ain't coming back from that one. You ain't going back to that college. But white people generally, we're going to fuck up. We are going to fuck up. We're going to fuck up. And it's that fragility. It's that bullshit fucking, like, it's just not even a response. It's not even an apology. It's not even an acknowledgement. It's not even a fucking desire to change at all. It's just fucking center on me and let me talk about me. I'm a victim. Blah, 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 blah. It's just fucking stupid, dude.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say like fuck her, but that's not an apology at all, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really wasn't, right?
No, it wasn't. It was definitely, it's like a -5. She sucks. she had a fucking second chance and then she still fucked it up with her self-centered racist ass. Bitch, bye.
Yeah, that wasn't good at all.
No. Good night. Now, I do have an example of what I would consider the right way to go. Everyday feminism. Usually, they're pretty, you know, they're pretty on top of their shit. The title of this article is You Were Right, We Were Wrong. Promising.
Okay.
Dear readers, so here's the deal. Rooted in honesty and transparency, over the weekend, we published a piece on food insecurity and hunger that was aimed at how employers could better support their food insecure employees. We got called out, and rightfully so, for failing to address the root of all these problems, a lack of livable wages. Upon receiving that feedback, a summary of the critique can be found here in a written piece by Hannah Brooks Olson. Shout out to Hannah. We engaged as an editorial staff and unanimously agreed with it. We knew it wasn't okay that it took being called out for us to realize that these critical points should have been not only included, but the entire foundation upon which the article was written. As we reflected on this insightful feedback, we reached the conclusion that we could update the piece to address the problem. Earlier today, we republished an updated piece along with an apology for having missed the mark. Again, we got it wrong. After posting the new piece on Facebook, we received a comment from a reader that finally made a click for us, giving us the aha moment that we needed to more fully understand the scope of our mistake. The issue wasn't simply about the framing of the article, it was who we addressed it to and why, and how that contributed to the very oppression that we're working to dismantle. At that point, we understood that our quote-unquote solution, therefore, still didn't address the issue in a responsible way. We made some serious missteps in the process, and it took a long time for us to understand what we did wrong. All that's left now is to be transparent about those missteps, to unpublish the article, and to move back and take more time to reevaluate how to have this conversation in a way that's more justice-oriented. But none of this, our learning, our commitment to do better, could have happened without your feedback, which has helped us recognize the necessary nuance and depth that we're missing on issues related to food insecurity. Let's be real. Learning from our mistakes is an essential part of our work, so we can't say enough how much we appreciate your supporting us and doing that by holding us accountable. We're growing, and we couldn't do that without you. We know that this work includes making mistakes, but we also know that we need to own up to those mistakes when they happen and to work tirelessly at not making them in the future. The best we can hope for is that we have opportunities to keep getting better. Thanks for pushing us to do just that. They have an update. Given all the feedback we've gotten about the article and the implications that it might have about the financial security of everyday feminism, we wanted to make sure that some of our organizational information that we've been sending out to inquiring folks would also be available to the public. We want to acknowledge first and foremost that all of your concerns with the online publication industry are totally on point, and we agree with you that all wholeheartedly. As many of you are aware, the current state of the industry, including in so-called feminist spaces, is often exploitative and oppressive. Many other popular online publishing websites, including a few feminist ones, were founded and or backed by millions of dollars of investments, yet still pay little or nothing to their contributors. So we really appreciate you calling us for our public accountability on this issue. And then they go in to talk about exactly the financial salary ranges there and how they pay people and stuff like that, because obviously they were like, yeah, da da da. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think that's what is the right thing to do, right? Like, I think it was interesting to see almost like the level one, level two, level three in real time, yeah. Right? Like the level two.
That's why I thought you'd appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the level two was definitely the second response. Like, oh man, we got that wrong. We respect you enough to really kind of this. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. We're talking about employers and whoa, we got this completely backwards. And then it's like, oh, you got it backwards, huh? How much do you pay? And you know, you can't then be like, oh, we can't really, our board, and see, we have a savings and a checking and we can't really talk about that. You have to kind of have a little bit of transparency when you step in shit. Mm-hmm. I hope you have your ducks in a row. And I personally can't speak for other folks. I like Everyday Feminism. I've had more than a few articles and engagement from them. They've got a great piece that I think takes Robin DiAngelo's theory of white fragility and condenses it in a little bit more digestible article format rather than her actual thesis.
Yes.
They were the hosts of the Detoxing from Toxic White Supremacy,
yep.
which referenced DiAngelo and her work, heavily. I think it was last Tuesday, like a week ago. So I'm here for Everyday Feminism, but I gather, I don't know, I think I've heard rumblings that they've had issues with some things before, but however they handled this, I thought was pretty good. I thought it was actually really good. And I think on the grand scheme of things, it's the thing that they didn't do was address how this came to be, like how editorially that this was decided to, how this got all the way to the point of publication. Like, they get that they got it wrong, but what steps led to them getting it wrong? What were they missing, and what have they done to correct that? But other than that, I thought they did a really excellent job. You know, they're like, okay, we fucked up twice.
Yeah.
there's a bit of, you know, you really have to be, I would say, maybe not in this space, but since they are a, since the, as a publication, right, and they're a destination, they're trying to kind of like, I don't want to say make money, but they are a for-profit at some point business. They have to like pay people, right? They have to have eyeballs coming in. And in the justice space or the, you know, this space, I should say, I don't know what the space is, but just, you know, intersectional feminist space, whatever, you can lose your cachet easily. You know, you can like fuck up and get fragile and be like, okay, that's not, you know, you're not going to be able to really do much by running roughshod and being an idiot. And they know what they had to do. Like, if you're going to talk the talk, you have to walk the walk when you fuck it up. And it's not when, it's if, you know. And I, you know, I think I'm sure I've talked about it on the show, but in a little tweet thread, I was like, okay, you know, we do this, you got to do this, and that. I fucked up with an individual in Philadelphia that, it was hard, man. That was like really hard. Like, I hope I don't fuck up that bad ever again. I hope I don't hurt somebody that bad ever again. I really, honestly, it's not that I don't want to fuck up because it was hard for me, but I hope I don't hurt somebody like that. Like, I really like had to sit with the pain I caused this black woman. And it was fucking tough as fuck.
You know? It was really tough.
You know, like, but I'm such a better person for it. And I have a relationship with them now. You know, and it wasn't by being fragile and fucking stupid. And, you know, you kind of got to, you got to be humble. And I think that this was humble enough.
Hmm.
You don't see humble hardly at all. So
yeah, you never see
humble. Let's get it there.
I thought that the fact that they really pointed that it was important for them to be transparent, I thought that was really critical. Like, that's what I really liked about it. I mean,
that's part of that humble. Yeah.
You know, I thought it was really good for them to like to value transparency and then like embody that. So that was really good. I would give them maybe, I'll give them an 8 because I don't think anybody's like perfect, but I'll give them an 8.
Well, and I'm trying to think, where's our scale?
Right? That's definitely the highest we've given.
Yeah. I don't know what I would give it, but on the criteria. Mm-hmm. So they definitely expressed regret.
Yep.
They definitely explained what went wrong. Mm-hmm. But where I say they missed out is what led to that.
Yes.
You know, they totally took responsibility.
Yep.
I think they declared repentance.
Yeah, I think
I would
so
say
too.
That. I think they offered repair by taking it down.
Yep.
Right. The first time they didn't.
Yep.
But the second time, like, yeah, we're going to take it down.
Yep.
I don't know if they formally requested forgiveness, but I think as a publication that's done something, I don't know if that's like, you don't formally.
I don't think you can do it that way.
Yeah, you don't ask your audience to forgive you. It's not an individual.
They did, like, you know, thank them for people for sticking with them and hopefully.
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
I mean?
that's the kind of way to do it. And then the piece we added was timeliness, juxtaposition, and modality. And I think in that regard, they even acknowledged that, you know, it sucks we had to get called out. Like, they acknowledge that the timeliness, juxtaposition, and modality wasn't ideal, right? And that led to it. So I think, Jesus, that we haven't had anybody hit all 7. I think you got to give it like an 8.5.
That's not bad. I think it gets an 8. Yeah.
I'd go maybe 8.5. Yeah.
All right, well, that's you. You only get to pick one of these white people stories, so pick carefully.
Well, there's the one's pointless. There's not even a story to it, but somebody, you know, like the mass customization world now, like everyone's making like, you can customize shit. And La Croix, of course, has got a make your own customization. And of course, somebody made white tears. So you can go to like the La Croix soda, white tears flavor. It's kind of funny. But that's not the story I'm going to talk about. Expedition leaders in the HMS Terror were in Terror Bay looking for a ship. And it doesn't get funnier than this, but they basically are looking for a long time for this ship. They can't find it. Go into this village. An Inuit individual says, "Oh, I'll take you right to it." Takes her to the boat, and they right away publish a story that they discovered the boat. It's like,
yeah, I think I mentioned it on here.
Discovered the boat.
I don't think we talked about it. No, I talked about it in a meeting the other day. I mentioned.
Yeah, but so it gets kind
of Columbus and ass.
It gets better though. It gets better. So
discovered
the they. God. Not only did they like walk in and like, oh, you know. The Inuit guy's like, "Here's the boat." But so the boat was next to some like island formation, and the Inuit name for that island formation is "Large Boat Sank Here." like literally, like you couldn't be more like, "We couldn't find the boat," or this, you know, group of people know exactly where it is and have named a formation in the water for the like "Large Boat Sunk Here." You know what I mean? Like, and then they have the fucking like call Cassidy to be like, "We discovered it." Really? I don't even know if you found it. You asked the dude that knew exactly where it was for the last 10 years, and he pointed it out. Now you're telling us. I don't know if that really gives you any credit or anything.
Oh, my God. I just got the most ridiculous email.
Why even read an email? We're on the John.
It was a message. It popped up on my thing, and I'm just like, anyways. So what else are you going to talk about? These? You didn't play the music, first of all.
White people, I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you.
White people.
Hey, 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 white people.
God, actually, fucking white people. I'm gonna hijack the whole fucking thing here because this is a white person that sent this email to me. He says, "Please take out the white and black statements in words in your statement of 'Don't try us' post."
Wait. What post is it? First of all, who the what? They're emailing you to tell you to take language out of a fucking tweet thread?
A Facebook post.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
They're policing your language on your Facebook page.
Not just policing my language on my Facebook page. Let me read the post, first of all, just so people
know. But who has the goddamn fucking, like, steel fucking cojones to fucking tell somebody to fucking edit their Facebook?
White people.
No. That's not even white thing. That's a fucking...
Here's the post he's complaining about. White person PSA. If you read an emotional post today by a black person processing the senseless death of one of our own that could have easily been any of us, and your first thought is to add your own feelings to the mix, don't. Because today is not the day to try us. In fact, don't try us any day. We are sick and tired of being sick and tired. Sincerely, your woke-ass black friend.
So, don't add your feelings.
Yes.
And the takeaway was this email you're about to read.
Yeah.
Where's my popcorn? I can't fucking. I honestly, you know what I need? I need a soundbite that's my T-shirt. Like even white people are sick of fucking white people's shit. Because it's literally like, honestly, Leslie, you tell me.
I can't. I literally like don't put your fucking feelings in black people's faces right now. That was my emotional response to these killings. Is seeing like, look, let us be the way we need to be.
I just can't.
Please take out the white and black words in your statement of, quote, "Don't try us" post. And please repost. You are a very influential person, and that type of talk is only pumping up people to keep up the dumb stuff. There are hate crimes in all races. I get that you are tired of it all. I do. I am also. It will either come to an end for us all soon, or we will grow up as a nation under God with liberty and justice for all.
The fuck is that even? What, like, what kind of, like, eat your fucking beans and rice and fucking look before you cross the road? God bless America. What the fuck? Why is he sending that to you? The fuck? Like, let me tell
I'm
you.
I'm not done.
Oh, my God.
I'm not done. Sick people out there and the media and camera phones are more readily available to capture it. But the focusing on just a certain race is racist in my eyes. And I know I don't have to read every post or watch the news and could turn a cheek when I don't like it. But that is the issue today. Too many turn cheeks. People need to be held accountable for their actions. All people. It's sickening to see cops get away with plain out murder, but also sickening to see a racist card pulled when idiots pull fake guns on cops and get shot. It's that type of story that sells because it kicks out of outrage when it just says black kid shot by white cop and so on. You get what I'm saying. The wording of all news stories these days are black and white, never a man and a woman or a man and a man. I know you might just delete this and move on to your BLM work. I get that it's your job and you feel it's your duty. I just wanted to speak a quick word with you from a different point of view that you must not get often. Bullets kill, but wording can kill a whole lot more. I'm happy that you are involved in something that needs addressed to be addressed, but addressed as a whole, the injustice of all murders and rapes. Sincerely, just a man with an opinion and a keyboard.
All lives matter. The fucking shit, fucking goddamn it. I just, honest to God, what in the entire fuck, dude?
And you know what? I honestly get those emails all the time, but they go into that like other folder I don't go to. But this person's friends with somebody I'm friends with, and so they're able to actually pop up. Like, it doesn't go in my inbox, but it's like a message request. It's like a secondary like place that you can like get to if you know people or if you're like in a group with somebody. It's like they're not a complete stranger, but they're not friends with you.
Yeah, I just still can't get over just how...
I want to repeat... I'm just going to read my statement again that he had the hugest problem with. White person PSA, if you read an emotional post today by a black person processing the senseless death of one of our own that could easily have been any of us, and your first thought is to add your own feelings to the mix, don't.
And then, like honestly, like, you wrote about 6 lines... that was like, don't fucking give me your centering emotional bullshit today, please. And he wrote about 800 lines of centering emotional bullshit. Yeah. I personally, like, just what the entire, like, honestly, like, you and I had this conversation the other day. Like, there's like, you know, like, how come, like, you know, not like how come we've gotten along so well and this and like, you know, I haven't had like, you know, grand fuck ups.
Yeah.
But I think more, you said, and I had never really like thought of it this way, but I think you said that, at no point in our being together have I ever...
Or before. That was what I really was talking about.
Have I acted on implicit bias?
Yeah.
Right?
I've never seen you act on an implicit bias. And I feel like when we met from the second I met you, when we weren't dating or friends or anything, you've just never... That's not you.
And that's that. I have a.
You have a fairness.
Yeah.
Job.
So I literally was talking with some folks today, and like, you know, tell me about this. And I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of like middle child. Like, it's a little bit of a, you know, I can't lie. Like, I have an equity and fairness thing that's like a bit of a.
So
trigger.
Does your mother?
Yeah, it's true. But so I don't know what we were talking about, but but you said that I had never done anything to act on a positive bias and that like made a difference to you. Like, you know, like, oh, like we can actually like that would be something that would be a deal breaker for you in being with me as a white person. Like,
or okay. Any person. Really.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. But so what this person has done, like, I just at no point in my like white fuckery. And like, I've had it like, believe me, I was like, I don't see color. Like that happened. like, you know, like little Andy was like, I don't see color, but like fucking to write somebody and center yourself in a way that's like, it's just like, it's beyond narcissistic. It's
and like
it's,
why are you following me?
Yes.
That's the only way you see
that's
it.
That's my point. It's like,
I don't even understand.
But like, please
like,
do this.
Away.
Please do that. Please do that. Or how about you do that?
Change the wording and repost it? Like, who the
you,
fuck
you
are
can,
these people?
You can repost it. Go ahead. Hit share.
I'm about to repost his fucking. I'm about to repost his letter. That's what I'm about to repost.
Easy, Patty.
This
easy, Patty.
Right here.
Easy, Patty.
I'm about to repost.
Easy, Patty.
I'll repost all right. Anyways, that's all the time I have for white people today.
That's the episode's name. Leslie's petty as fuck.
Oh, I think the next segment's about me being petty too, actually.
It kind of is, dude. Kind of is.
You got to play that song.
Where's the... do I have that one?
I hope so. We got receipts. We got receipts. Yeah. We got receipts.
This only cracked me up because, again, like the amount of like fuckery you get is just
people are horrible though.
It's not just horrible,
I hate
like
people.
Well, and listen, like I do feel like there's a you know, there's like a logarithmic, like the more people engage with your content, the more it gets retweeted, the more like the trolls are just like, oh, look at this person.
And let me tell you, this fucking blue check bullshit has only made it worse, I have to say. Well, I was talking with a few other verified folks about the new fuckery that has come with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll start off for you, but you had a tweet because you know, Kaepernick and people are talking about boycotting the NFL because Colin had the audacity to kneel down during the fucking anthem on 9/11. Oh my God. So you wrote, wait a minute, these white folks want to boycott NFL now? I'm laughing my ass off. No boycott when the NFL covered up domestic violence and rape, but now that's too much. And that got, you know, a couple hundred retweets because it is too much.
It truly is.
It's like, fucking domestic violence and rape. But
I saw a thing today and kneeling? It had like the five like most hated people in the NFL. Kaepernick's number one. The other four are either rapists, two of them. One of them is that dude that stomped on that stomps on people. And the third one is
Dominic, sir.
Yeah. And the fourth one is a repeated domestic abuser. But number one is Colin Kaepernick.
Fuck. So you're like, you know, this is crazy. Like, you guys want to boycott this too much. So I'll give his name. Chris Butler, CP Butler 57.
Yeah, fuck you, dude.
Wrote back with the, you know, the equivalent of like, get a job, but like, did you, crying face?
Yeah.
And I guess he didn't know your body of work. he was not aware.
He wasn't.
That Leslie Mack had actual fucking receipts.
I had a lot of receipts. Yeah. I was like, my first tweet to him was, what did I say? I
think he said, yes, here's just one of the campaign materials.
No, my first one, I like quote tweeted him and I said, yes, I also started an entire campaign around domestic violence in the NFL called CoverGirl Cop. What did you do? That was the first thing I said. And then I followed that up. I replied to that and I said, yes, here's just one of the campaign materials I helped create around domestic violence in the NFL. Yeah.
Yeah. But you had like,
and then I put a link. I go, here's me talking on Make It Plain with Zarina Maxwell about domestic violence in the NFL. Like, motherfucker, don't come for me. I got all the receipts. Don't try me.
Yeah, you had a lot of receipts.
Don't.
That day.
Just do me a favor.
The receipts were plentiful.
Yes, they were.
Plentiful.
Yeah. Let's jump to the Yes All Caps.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where's my cops?
What you gonna do? When the search on run come for you, tell me what you gonna do.
Wait a minute. Am I reading that? Am I fucking reading that headline?
Yes, the officer who fatally shot Amadou Diallo in 1999 to be named Sergeant of the Year. Sergeant Kenneth Boss will be one of eight New York City police sergeants honored at the Sergeants Benevolent Association luncheon. Mm-hmm. He currently works with the NYPD Aviation Unit and is receiving an award for rappelling from a helicopter to rescue a couple who was stranded overnight on a small island, the news site reports. Boss is one of eight NYPD sergeants who will be recognized at the annual luncheon to be held at Giando on the Water in the Williamsburg section of Brooklyn. The SBA realizes the hard work that is put forth by its members, so it's very important that they be acknowledged for their momentous efforts throughout the year, Ed Mullins, the head of the SBA, said. Boss was one of four officers who fired 41 shots that killed 22-year-old Diallo, who was retrieving his wallet in a poorly lit vestibule of his Bronx, New York apartment building in 1999.
In his own doorway.
Boss was acquitted in Diallo's shooting and chose to stay with the department. As the Daily News notes, he was sued twice and lost the right to get his guns back until 2012 when former police commissioner Raymond Kelly relented. He was promoted to sergeant in December.
Mm-hmm. So he was off the force for a decade?
No, he was on the force. He couldn't have a police weapon.
So he sued twice to be able to fucking keep carrying a firearm.
He was sued twice. And due to those suits, he lost the right to get his guns back.
Got it.
And then Commissioner Kelly was like, fine, get your gun back, asshole, or my boy, whichever. I don't know. And the couple said that that he rescued said they had never heard of the Diallo case and said he was very nice. He was very nice. First, he came down and asked, you okay? Do you need medical attention? He said, you don't need to do anything. Let me do all the work. Just hold my arm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying they should or shouldn't say he's very nice. I get frustrated with everybody's that constant nice. Framing.
Everybody's just, nice. We're all nice.
The binary who's good, nice? Bad, nice, you know, just like fucking, like racism isn't hooded Klansmen. Mm-hmm. It's fucking this dude getting his gun back after shooting Diallo 10 times. Mm-hmm. at least.
Yeah.
And not an area problem.
Yeah.
You know, racism isn't a cross burning and fucking hooded Klansmen running through town shouting the N-word.
Nope.
It's the 10,001 people that justify Black Death by trolling on Twitter by saying, yeah, like, you know, well, yeah, but the BB gun looked real and he, you know, he didn't have his hands up and police officers say and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Fucking bastards.
We're skipping a bunch of stuff because I just can't with a lot of this.
All right. Go to wherever you want to go next.
So let's see. What do I want to talk about next? Okay. So let's talk about the don't be a fuckboy 10 whack commandments.
Okay. Why am I highlighted? You want me to do
that? No, I can do it. I can do it as well.
Okay.
Okay. So for those people, you know, who are fuckboys, just don't. Here's the 10 whack commandments. Ready? Number one.
I'm ready.
If you're a good guy, you don't got to keep saying you're a good guy. In fact, just stop saying who and what you are and A, let other people do that for you and just show people who you are. You don't have to be like, I'm a good guy. No, you're not.
You know, that's
my
like
name is class.
Yes, exactly.
Well, you can't say that. Like, if you say you're classy, like, you're not classy.
Yeah.
I'm a good, but I'm one of the good guys.
Mm-hmm.
You can trust me, girl.
Yeah.
I'm one of the good guys. Mm-hmm. Let me just put the head in.
Yeah. Also, just shut the fuck up more often, period. Like, number two, if she turns you down, walk away, Holmes. Like, really, do some yoga, contemplate life, jog around the block, call your moms, whatever. Just,
yeah.
No.
There was a, remember the street harassment video that got kind of viral, and then there was some follow-up as to whether or not they were deliberately targeting individuals of color with the street harassment video.
Mm-hmm.
But there were more than a few individuals where the harassment was like, blocks, like it just went on and on and on and on. It's like, damn, dude, like, no, like, let it go.
Yep,
you don't have to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say this: part of what I do in my career is sales oriented,
right?
And I'll tell sales people I'm working with and training and shit like that. I'm like, listen, you know, you want a yes, right? We all want a yes. Like, let's be honest. Like, you know, you down to fuck? Well, you want to get a yes? I got it. Like, I feel you. But, you know, a no's better than a maybe. And there shouldn't be any maybe. Like, maybe doesn't exist in the consent game. But, like, in the sales game, it's like, you know, like, a yes is great. But a maybe, I got to fucking come back and talk and try and go. Fuck that, dude. I want to get, you know, if it's no, fine. Okay. There's another sale to make. That's, like, a bad way to talk about women. That's horrible, actually. But don't fucking push it. Just take no and be like, okay, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
You can be done with that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let's see. Number three, give up your seat, fam, on a bus, on a train. Like, I get it. You had a hard day too. You was at your desk flirting with your work wife, or you was standing up all day at the construction site working for the man. I feel you, but she had to go through shit you can't even fathom. Plus, it's just a nice fucking thing to do. It ain't that serious. You can shit your ass down when you get home. I know you got a couch at the crib. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Number four, be honest. Like, I done had some very fuckboy moments. I've lied, I've cheated, made promises I ain't keep from situations with no real explanation as to why. All you got is your word. Stand by it. Stand behind it. If you're honest from the jump, it saves you a whole lot of trouble. Someone may still get hurt or even hate your existence, but hey, at least you can say you were upfront. Intentions are everything, everything. Be aware of yours, be honest with the people in your life, but more importantly, be yourself.
I don't be fucking with a lot of hoes
no
anymore.
Don't forget the
was
no
that
more.
Stevie J? Who was that?
That was Stevie J.
Talking
I'm only
saying
this because you were talking to Dr. Miss Moonstache about this.
Yeah, I really... This,
like, exact no, fucking like, thing. Like, he needs this entire
yeah,
list.
He is a fuckboy. And yeah. I honestly love the guy, and I can't understand what millennial women see in him.
I don't see... They got daddy issues.
Way too many.
Mm.
But so, like, the joke, like, we made a joke about this phrase, chunking through pussy, and it was, like, kind of, like, inappropriate, like you know. But he kind of is chunking through pussy in, like, a grotesque way.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally straight up was like, listen, bro, me to you, I'm telling you, our age, where you're at, you come in and be like, listen, I don't want monogamy. I'm not looking for monogamy. I'm not trying to be, you know, doing anything. But if you want to get down and we, you know, have some fun, you know, we both tested and clean and we're being safe and we're doing this, but there's no, you know, nothing. Like if there's anything that we're going to build from this, it's a three-way. Like, I don't want nothing. Like, be dead ass with it. And, like, you know, there aren't, like, maybe that does limit your relationship opportunities, but they're going to be a lot more fucking, like, I don't know, like, sane. Like, it just, it's like, why go through life with this fucking, like, I don't know, like, being one way and wanting to be a different way? Like, I just, that's bizarre to me. Like, I increasingly want in my life radical honesty, where it's just like, tell me what you really mean and want. I, you know, I don't want to be fucking around. And the way that he is with women is it's almost like a long con. What can I get away with next game?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, like,
it's just unhealthy for everybody. For everybody. Involved.
For him included.
Like, it's
for
not
him
healthy
included.
For him. It's not healthy for them. It just doesn't make any sense. And like, there's just no.
And honestly, I'm like, believe me, if he was like, listen, I don't want to be monogamous. I want a date. This is just what I want. Like, okay, be that way. And I'm sure you'll have plenty of success.
You'll have some success.
You're not
going to
be.
I mean, you may not get everybody that you would have got before, but it's not like you'll be like starved.
Yeah, you ain't going to be alone.
Yeah. I mean, it's just not necessary. All right. So number five is stop trying to police feelings, hair, body parts, clothing. Just stop. Yes, we live in a free society with free will. Deal. People will do and or say what they want, how they want, and when they want to do it. Yes, you can have an opinion, but said opinion does not have to be demeaning or offensive. She's breastfeeding in public. That bothers you? You saying anything gonna make her say, you know what? Let me stop doing this natural thing that my natural body, that your natural ass mama did for you and you as a little ass person. Nah, so stop. She's twerking. Bet your moms would have twerked for MLK if he came down 138th in the Grand Concourse. Check why you're offended, homie. Mm-hmm. Number six.
I never had any issues with that. Like, I'm not like into like policing this, that, anything. But I will say there are a few things that I don't know why. Like, I just like, I have a preference maybe.
Okay.
And I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing.
What are they?
So I'm, and I've said this when you first said, I'm not into to women that have to beat their face. Like, if you got to like.
Oh, like not a lot of makeup.
Yeah. If you got to put all kinds of like foundation.
I'd say that's a preference, but yeah. I don't think you look down on women. That
I don't.
Do it.
But that's a very different thing. I don't look down. I said across the board, I don't look down on anyone.
Right.
But there are certain things that I have a preference for. Right. And I guess maybe it's like, you know, like that's why we're together. I'm, I'll say fortunate, but you know, there's things that, you know, like my level of, you know, I want to say like, what, because no matter how I say this, it's going to sound fucking horrible. Like you don't, like, I don't allow anything, right? I don't know, you can be however you want to be.
Right.
But like, you know, you're my wife and like, my preference would be there's a level of like, you know, demure to some degree, you know, like not like whatever. And
what,
like,
do you mean demure?
Not demure, but like, you know, there's just a
like
preference.
Deference?
Not deference, but like,
I don't know,
like in dress and style and just like, you know, like your titties ain't out and shit, like, you know.
Okay.
But I'm saying, like, I'm not saying that I can tell you.
Let me
could
tell you one thing. If I started dressing with my titties out, you would be fine with it.
I probably
you would be like, all right, let's go. You're so full of shit right now.
You trying to say like dead overnight ass. I'd be a titty man? Like,
not
you know what? I'm a titty
man. I'm not saying that, but I just know you'd be like, oh, you look sexy. Okay, let's do this. Like, you're so full of shit right now. You are so
foolish. I'm going to say guilty.
Exactly. So
I resemble
shut your
that.
Ass up. Number six, stop catcalling. Just stop. There's mucho places to get your holla on. The club, library, college campus, class, bar, museum, party, coffee shop, counter, concert, zoo, aquarium, a baseball game, at work, the dentist's office. Just don't do it in the street. And if you really need to have the convo, don't grab her arm or pull her, champ. If she's got earphones in, let her be. Unless you're also reading The Framework for Dissecting White Male Privilege in the 21st Century. Two, let her be. Smile and just keep it moving. I just made that title up. Cool title, though, huh?
Mm-hmm. I ended a couple of Twitter friendships over It's Just High.
Yeah, fuck that. I got street harassed in New York, in Brooklyn. I was going to the city one day. I don't even think I looked that cute, but whatever. I mean, I would say I've looked cuter.
Dude stepped to you in front of me.
Yeah, that's true. He did.
Come like just.
It's like, hey, Ma.
I'm like, what?
He's right here. Anyways, but the thing that upset me is it was a group of guys. It was daytime, so I wasn't afraid or anything. But as I was approaching them, like, I started to get anxious and I was mad at myself for that because I didn't want to like bring that energy to these dudes. They could just be like dudes just doing dude things, which is, you honestly, like, most of the time that's what I encounter. And so I wouldn't say that I like, I wasn't inviting in my countenance, but I didn't want to be like cold shouldery either.
I got you.
And you know it wasn't even, I was barely like past them, and I heard immediately, and I was just like, god damn it, fuckers. Number seven, do not send unrequested dick pics. Do not send unrequested dick pics. Do not send unrequested dick pics. Do not send unrequested.
I gotta be honest. Do not. I went my entire, I mean, seriously, like, I'm proud. I went my entire 43 years on life.
Yes.
Without sending a dick pic until just the other day.
Uh-huh. I asked for the dick pic.
You think I was sending it to strangers?
No, I'm just saying that I asked for the dick pic.
You did, but I hadn't. That was a new one for me. I was like, I'm not really good at selfies. How do you make this bigger?
Yeah. Number eight, don't hit her. Don't rationalize hitting her. Don't make veiled comments about hitting her. If she's pregnant, don't threaten her with hitting her. If you ain't laying hands on her for massage or prayer or some coil action, nah, no excuse, none. She's trying to put her hands on you, walk away, call the police, jump out a window. I don't know, just nah.
Mm-hmm. I can't believe that has to be one of them, but
hey, okay. That's a fuckboy move. She provoked me.
Yeah.
She should have known better.
I think of the fuckboy move as the threatening and saying you're going to do it.
But he mentions that in there too. Number nine, don't be a creep. Don't follow her home. Don't send her creepy texts and DMs. Don't call her a thot or a bitch or a whore or a slut when she curves you. That's life, man. Dust yourself off. You'll live. And number 10, be aware of your privilege as a man and don't use it to be a coward or a sucker by saying and doing things to take advantage. Be understanding. Listen to others. Just because you hurt doesn't mean you get to hurt another. I know we as men have been taught that soft or whatever, but we got to invest time for love and healing and compassion and understanding. That's real strength. You want to lead with machismo and brute force? Cool. Just know you won't last very long. The journey we're on ain't for the faint of heart. Leave a stamp on the world that matters in every interaction. Be humble and gentle and sincere. The wind can be gentle and firm. It's still the wind, though. So be that and not a fuckboy. Boom. All right,
boom.
I like the list. Very good list. Keep that up there. We might have to call this Don't Be a Fuckboy this episode.
All
right. The last bit's a little bit fun. This next bit, which is 15 songs you sung as a 90s kid that you really shouldn't have.
All right.
So this will be a little bit of a retro spackle. Let's see. Hopefully the sound will be good. I get around. Oh. What you mean you don't know? Yeah, that probably wasn't appropriate.
I get around.
Probably not.
As a kid.
Kill somebody else's guy. Yeah, that's not good either. Nope, that's not good.
90s R&B was problematic as hell. I knew this would be up here. It was the first thing I thought, literally.
Just shake your rope.
Literally, zoom, zoom, and a boom, boom. I was like, you know, what was that about?
Just shake your rope. Take it to me like you want to.
Oh, yeah. I always thought this was dirty as shit.
It was dirty. I want to know, how does it hang? Straight up, wait up, hold up, Mr. Lover.
Hey, they're talking about penis.
You're a sexy mother. Well, up. If I need it in the morning or the middle of the night. I ain't too proud to beg, y'all. Oh, Lisa, she was so good.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Tony Tone. Get it, let's get down. Come on. Yeah. Mm-mm. Pedophile.
Yeah, this one's creepy now.
So creepy. Everything he sings is creepy. What you want? Oh, it's Drew Hill. Tell me what you need. Hey, tell me if it ain't good enough. Yeah, 90s kid. No, shouldn't have been singing this one either. Uh-oh. Somebody's rocking, knocking their boots. Yeah, it's not good. H-Town. And doing it well. She was raised out in Brooklyn. Oh, PP.
I don't know. I don't know if this is in there.
Yeah, probably not.
I mean, I guess other people's pussy.
Yeah, other people's pussy is probably not good. Or penis, for that matter. Let's do it. Hey,
how many babies were made to this shit, dude? My pony.
Genuine.
That was the stroke, though.
Oh, yeah. Jan Jackson, anytime, any place. People watching them. Mm-mm. I don't give a damn what they think. I want you now. Uh-oh. It's your song, Drew. I feel a little poke.
coming through from you.
Why you always lying?
Next. This song is dope, though, still.
You know what I want to do.
All right, so that was the 15 songs we should not have been listening to as a 90s kid. Appreciate that. You had something you want to talk about how to handle trolls on...
No, it was from Cheska Lee, but we don't have to play it. It was a bit of an audio. It was just... she had a nice... she does her videos decoded, and she did a really good one about handling...
I've never heard someone say, but what about black-on-black crime? We've got you covered.
They just got all the tropey troll bullshit.
Scrolling through your Facebook feed, you'll probably see articles and arguments about Black Lives Matter. A lot of people are mad or just confused about this movement. So here are responses to four questions you might hear when talking about Black Lives Matter.
Oh, so you care about black lives? Then why aren't you talking about black-on-black crime?
First off, this assumes that the black community isn't worried about gun violence, which isn't true. For example, Ceasefire in Chicago is an organization that actually intervenes in local street and gang fights. There's even a documentary about them called The Interrupters. Black Lives Matter isn't just about the loss of life, which is always terrible. It's about the lack of consequences when black lives are taken at the hands of the police. When a civilian has committed a violent crime, they're generally arrested, tried, and then convicted. Conversely, there's a lot of evidence that it's very rare to secure an indictment against a police officer for excessive force. And an indictment is just a trial. It's not even a conviction. Also, black-on-black crime isn't a thing. 84% of white murder victims were killed by another white person. But we don't call it white-on-white crime. That's because our communities are still very segregated. So if you have the misfortune of being the victim of a crime, the perpetrator will most likely look like you. So why do people always bring up black-on-black crime? Because it's a diversion. They're trying to prove black citizens don't have the right to be outraged about police violence because their communities have a crime problem. But the truth is, black people are not more violent or more likely to commit crimes than anyone else. The reality is, because of a history of institutional racism, black communities have higher poverty rates, suffer from poorly funded schools, and are more likely to be targeted by police. So are you saying blue lives don't matter? Of course the lives of cops matter. That's why if you kill a police officer, you are rightly arrested and prosecuted. But saying blue lives matter effectively lumps a profession in the same category as a marginalized group of people. Becoming a police officer is an occupation. It's a choice. It's not something you're born into. And most importantly, advocating for citizens is not anti-cop. The job of police officers is to protect and serve all communities. If that's not happening, we need to reassess and find a solution. So you're saying only black lives matter? That's racist. We've talked about this before, but this movement is not saying black lives matter more than anyone else's. It's saying black lives should matter, but the way that our justice system, our media, and our police have been operating suggests that they do not. It's totally okay for a movement to focus on issues specific to one marginalized group. Gay bars aren't unfair to straight people. A breast cancer walk isn't unfair to other forms of cancer, and Save the Rainforest isn't saying you hate all other trees. To quote one law professor's letter, the subtext of Black Lives Matter is, because of the brutalizing and killing of black people at the hands of the police, and the indifference of society in general, and the criminal justice system in particular, it is important that we say, black lives matter. But what about the white victims of police violence? There's way more of them. Yes, there are more white people killed by police officers than black people. But when you look proportionately within the populations, black Americans are 2.5 times as likely as white Americans to be shot and killed by police officers. Black men make up just 6% of the nation's population, but of all the unarmed people shot and killed by police in 2015, 40% of them were black men. Those numbers are tragic. If an unarmed citizen is killed by the police, or an armed citizen is killed under suspicious circumstances, people should be upset no matter what the victim's race. This isn't a competition. Sadly, police violence is a problem in many communities, but bringing up other victims to discredit the Black Lives Matter movement is pretty disingenuous. If you really believe that police violence is a problem, you should support Black Lives Matter, as well as other organizations fighting for victims and their families. I know these conversations are hard, but they're necessary if we want to move forward. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on Decoded.
That was actually an old one back in July that I hadn't seen, but I love Cheska and her just straightforward videos. Simple and yes, easy to digest.
For sure, for sure. So, TV, you watched San Andreas while I was playing?
I couldn't. I fucking couldn't, dude. I tried watching it, and the first, 10 minutes, it's got Dwayne Johnson as a helicopter pilot, and it's just, it's absurd. It's the most absurd ridiculous. I can't believe how absurd it is. It was absurd. And then it's got like Paul Giamatti and all the other people. But the scene I'm watching, the Hoover Dam, like the big earthquake comes and the Hoover Dam like implodes or some shit. And I had to ask Clove because I forgot the name of it. But there's when CGI is getting so good that you can't really tell if it's real or CGI, but you kind of know that it's fake. So you know it's CGI, but it looks real. They call this the uncanny valley. And like sometimes you can like, you know, avoid it or get to it, whatever. This shit was so bad. Like it was just poor. It was I couldn't believe they did it. I was like, this is the worst production I've ever fucking seen ever. And it was just bad. I couldn't watch it. The CGI was awful. It was literally like, it wasn't just dated. It was like, it made the movie look bad. It like, it broke the whatever wall. It's like, oh, I'm not watching a movie. I'm watching, this is terrible. like you're watching Paul Giamatti run. You're like, oh, he's on the Hoover Dam running. Oh no, that's a big fake looking thing in a wave of fake. Oh, okay. There's Paul Giamatti. Got it. Mm-hmm. And I did watch The Revenant. And I know a lot of people loved it. And people talk
did
about
they
the.
Have?
Yeah, you know, got like Oscar this and that.
I feel like
and,
they didn't.
Well, here, I'll give you my opinion. I'm not trying to like, you know, I know people like, you have an opinion on something and people like, oh, I'm going to debate you or fight you. I think wrong or different, whatever. This is just my opinion. It was long. And. It had a lot of those like B shots where it was just sort of like cinema, you know, like cinematography for cinematographic sake, where it was literally just like a upwards shot in the pine needles with like in the background. A lot of those shots where it's like, I guess maybe like the Canadian wilderness would be the character, and this was a character study about the Canadian wilderness and, you know, and men's survival in it and shit. But. And I know they only shot during natural light. They didn't use any fake light at all. And
right.
it was stunning. You know, like the DP, the director of photography, like it absolutely, like cinematographic was literally stunning. Had some really amazing shots. And there was some gore and some stuff that was like, you know, pretty fucked up and shit. But at the end, for me, it was just like, huh? Like I just was like, but why? Like, I don't know. I just was kind of like, okay. I don't know. It petered out. Not petered out. I don't know. I wasn't all that excited about the conclusion, and I don't know what the purpose was other than, you know, to show you some Alaskan wilderness and people surviving in it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I have a plot around that.
I guess. Wasn't there some, like, he was saving, like, his half, you know, native son or some shit in it? Wasn't there some plot that had to do with that?
I mean,
that?
I don't want to, like, spoil. I mean, I guess it's on HBO now.
The fuck? Spoiler alert? That shit been out forever.
Spoiler alert. So he got a native son, and it's a revenge, basically. He gets killed, and then he's got to, you know, go after the guy that killed his son.
That makes perfect sense.
And then in the end, he you know, gets his revenge, and he's a bloody fucking mess, right? Because he's like survived all this shit. He's got like scars, and he's a fucking just like, you know, he got like attacked by a bear. He's a bloody fucking mess. He's just a disaster. This fight, like, he's got stabbed and shit. Like, he's just covered in all kinds of stuff. And they do a tight shot of him going, end of movie.
You know what?
Literally, he kills it. He gets all the way to the end, like, stabby, 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 like,
I mean, if that's the MacGuffin, his son already dead, right? They should have had him die right on top of him. That would have been perfect.
Fade to black.
I'll assume he did die, fucker. we've still been loving Atlanta, of course. It's been really good. Funny stuff.
It is... so clearly written by black people.
Yeah, I might call it probably the blackest show I've ever seen on television.
There is...
I'm willing to say that, like, definitively.
Oh, yeah. No, there's... I would say only in the last maybe 5 years, and you could maybe do, like, a list of shows that have done it, and it wouldn't be very long, but Blackish is on there. There's a few TV shows that have had jokes and humor that are not just targeted for black people, but are like, oh yeah, this is going to be missed by all the white people. Like, this isn't written for white people at all. Like,
I don't think that about Blackish.
Maybe Blackish isn't one of them. They've had a few jokes like that here and there.
I think because it's so specifically about like this navigation of white spaces that it always is palatable for white. Like, they'll get what they're talking about. So the construct of it is meant to be understood.
What would be another show that has had
jokes?
There
isn't one.
You think this is the first one that's
dead
just
ass,
like,
I'm telling you.
There's no, there are, like I said,
there have been shows that have played on black culture, but not on, not using the humor of black culture in a way that white people won't understand. There are a lot of things in this show that if you don't understand black culture, you won't even understand why they were in the show at all. Like, you literally will be like, I don't know what happened. You'll be completely confused.
Yeah.
I love this show.
It's tremendous.
So, it's so good.
Big ups to Glover. You know,
like, you know, big ups to him for the writing. I don't necessarily even like his character that much, to be honest. I think he's the weakest thing on the show.
The weakest link.
But I like that about it.
Fucking Paperboy is a Paperboy is the best. Riot.
Fucking hilarious. He's the blackest character ever written on television. He's so fucking black, so unapologetically black.
because
the nuance of him, like, his ego is there, and his, like, all of the things that make there's no two-dimensionalness to their blackness, and that's what's so great about the show.
On the most recent episode, when fucking Tran, the dude's trying to fucking bite on his style, and fucking he's got like all the, like, you know, Snapchats and shit, and he starts texting the guy, and fucking Glover's walking out like, "Don't do it, you're gonna make it worse." And he just he's tatted away, fucking like a complete essay, dude. Mm. His character is just hilarious, but I love the show. It already got renewed, which is, so I think, good. A huge. Nod and indication.
Yeah, there's another show that comes on. I think it's also on FX called Better Things. It's really, really sharply written show as well. It's from Louis C.K. and the one who played his wife on that Louis show on HBO. She's the star of the show, and she also is the creator of the show. And it's about, kind of loosely based on her life as an actress and, you know, in Hollywood at her age with kids and all of that goes along with it. But it's really well written. It's very non-traditional. I don't think there's like a soundtrack to it at all. And it almost has these like quick cuts to show you, like, she'll be talking about something and it'll like flash to like show you what she's talking about and then come back to her current conversation. It's really well written. The kids are fucking hilarious. She's really funny. And it's a really good skewering of, like, you know, gender and, you know, entertainment and family and all of that. It's really nice to see like a normal looking older, you know, woman portraying a believable character that's not, you know, in the midst of some sort of like super crisis, just that life is difficult. And I really like it. So I would highly recommend check it out. And the Great British Bake Off.
Oh my God. I love that show. It's so delicious.
That show's so good.
It's the number one show in the UK.
It should be.
It's huge.
It should be. It's so good. It's so, so, so good. And then, of course, Ray Donovan finished last night or two nights ago.
Sunday night. It took a good turn.
It was a good season.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, I'm here for it.
I've been a big fan of the show for a long time, and we got to see we had a little moment with Liev Schreiber in New York City. We told him we loved the show.
Ray Donovan.
He was like, "Thanks," walking his tiny little teacup Yorkie.
It was hilarious.
And
no shade, but he had really bad skin.
Yeah, I think you can see that on the show, so that's not a surprise. a few plugs. I think we have a day or two left in the Teespring campaign. Is that right?
Yeah, I think 4 days.
4 more days. You guys can buy some shirts. In fact, support my work.
I haven't been pushing it. I usually like tweet it a lot more. Oh, maybe it's tipped. I think it has tipped.
All of them? 5 days.
No, more Mixburger Faggots. Black Lives, Green and White Feelings has maybe 2 more left, and Raise Better White People has 1 more until it's tipped. Mm-hmm. But buy a T-shirt.
No, it says Black Lives White Feelings has reached the minimum.
Oh, you know, I made a goal, and then I think it'll go regardless of whether the goal is hit because we've already sold.
Yeah, it says we reached our minimum, so buy the shirts. And then also, I'm on the site right now, and so did Raise Better White People. That says that also reached the minimum. And
Stay Woke did too.
So check them out.
Awesome. Yeah. And I'll say this for white people. You don't know the joy of wearing a Raise Better White People T-shirt in public.
Yeah.
It's a good look in Walmart.
Yeah, definitely. Also, you can still contribute to my vacation fund if you're so inclined. I'm trying to raise $15 per day.
Between now and the end of the
campaign. I actually did not get my $15
today.
No, and I'm missing 2 days actually, so maybe.
No.
and make that happen. I don't know if I tweeted it out today because I didn't do Hootsuite, so I got to check that out. But yeah, maybe you can work on that between now and midnight, Drew.
Okay.
So yeah, so check that out. We'll have that link up there, and you can also, I think it's pinned on one of my pages somewhere. And also, I'm going to be hitting the road. I'll be in Atlanta. Today, you know.
Sorry, I guess Richard Sherman just dropped some knowledge on police.
Yeah, I heard it wasn't very good, but yeah. Anyways, I hate Richard Sherman.
You it just came out an hour ago, and you heard it wasn't good?
Some people were tweeting about it.
Okay.
In fact, Six Finger Tim tweeted about it, and I think the first thing he said was, fuck Richard Sherman.
So, okay.
Take that for what you want.
Dr. Six Fingers is a friend of the John, and he's a lawyer. And I respect him and his
that was the first thing he
his
said.
Intellect in this regard. And I won't listen to it. If he said fuck Sherman, I'll
I mean, you can listen to it. I'm just telling you what he said. He tagged me. That's the reason why I saw it, because I guess there's a Harambe joke that he makes, whatever that monkey's name was.
Yeah.
And him and I had a discussion earlier this week about how racist those, like, anybody making those jokes are. And so then here goes Richard Sherman making one in a press conference about Black Lives Matter or whatever. Fuck Richard Sherman. So also, I'm hitting the road. So if you are in Atlanta, you can hook up with me. I'll be at the Many Rivers to Cross music festival next Saturday and Sunday, October 1st and 2nd in Atlanta, and I'll be in the Social Justice Village. So you can stop by the Black Lives of UU table, or I think I'll be doing a large project, and I'll announce it on Twitter once everything's finalized. I'm actually really excited about it. I don't even think you know about it yet, but I can't talk about it yet, but it's going to be really fucking cool. So be on the lookout for that. But I'll be in the Social Justice Village either way, so you can check me out there.
Nice.
And also, I'll be going to St. Louis the following week, or 2 weeks after that. And you can catch up with me a number of ways. You can come to the Revive Love Tour Stop, which is on Saturday the 15th. And you can go to First Unitarian Church of St. Louis to check that out. 7 o'clock is showtime, so you can come check that out. Rev Sekou and the Holy Ghost featuring J. Marie Hill will be playing. They are a monster, amazing band that does just fantastic movement music. And so hopefully you guys will come check it out. It's free to attend. You can make a donation at the door if you choose, but it's not required. So just come on out if you're in St. Louis. And on Sunday of the 16th, I'll actually be preaching at, I want to get the name of the congregation right, because there's quite a few in the area.
I'm sorry, I'm on Twitter while you're, does that mean interrupt? Yes. Someone literally followed me the other day that was like following all these cuck accounts, and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, this is ridiculous. So I like blocked the person, this or that, and I made something like something about it. So someone literally just tagged me and said, I searched for cuck and your account was the second result, but reading your timeline is not arousing. Okay.
Wow. First of all, it's disturbing. You search for cuck and your name came up twice. You know what?
I searched cuck on Twitter and I'm second.
That's terrible.
Well, now I did have.
Is that your claim to fame, or was that when you, because you had your name as cuck?
I had my name as what the cuck.
What the cuck.
Who the cuck. Or
a cuckservative. I don't know.
I don't know what it was. Uncle Cuckus.
Uncle Cuckus. You've had quite a few cuck, because when they come, it's hilarious. Anyways, I'll be.
I didn't know that actual people, cuck enthusiasts.
Who searches that? Like actual cuck enthusiasts? I can't. You know, they have a problem with this whole, like, usurping of their shit. Anyways, I'll be preaching at First Unitarian Church in Alton, Illinois on Sunday, October 16th at their normal service. If you want to come and hear what I have to say to the fine people of Alton, which is actually the closest UU church to Ferguson, Missouri, even though it's in Illinois, just across the border. So you can come to St. Louis. And finally, I'll be in New Orleans. You can check me out there again with the Revive Love Tour. I'll be there on October 28th is the day of the show there. So you can see all of that. I'll have it on my website, LeslieMack.com. I'm excited for the tour. You know, the first stop was this past weekend in Knoxville, and they're headed to Nashville today right now for this weekend. And I couldn't make these first two stops, but I'm excited to join them for the last three.
I'm sorry. I'm really tripping at all these accounts. Under the cuck heading, there's my account. You gotta see this, Leslie. This is the worst thing fucking ever.
I'm coming to see it.
Holy fuck.
Stop. Is it a list?
Look at this.
Look oh my this. God. Oh cuck my couple. God. Cuck and BBC slut. Cucking font. Not your average cuck.
Single cuck for love. Look at the emoji. We need that emoji.
God. Oh my God.
It's a black dude, a white dude, and a white woman. It's drawn.
Oh my
Burlington
God.
Cuck Factory.
This is stop.
Cuckold lifestyle. Cuck wife. Cuck wife. It says black owned. Is it
I can't. I'm number one. It's got a picture of you and me, though. It's got a picture of you and me.
Terrible, Drew.
This is the worst
How
thing
did this happen?
This is the worst thing ever.
This is horrible.
Look, how am I above the head to count? Look at that picture. What the fuck? I can't. Oh, my God.
Wow.
They need to update the algorithm, please.
Well, clearly the name of the episode is Number One Cuck, so. There's that.
And with that, I think that brings our show to an end. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate you listening to us, and
good night, everybody.
High five.